Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brew-Built X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brew-Built Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brew-Built line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brew-Built X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brew-Built conicals. You can trust Brew-Built with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brew-Built at morebeer.com.
Homebrewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, beer drinkers,
get ready for an all-new experience in information exchange and beer culture.
Your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers from around the globe
right to your home.
You're not just listening to broadcasters, it's the Brewcasters
on the Brewing Network.
It's another great Sunday at Brewing Network Studios. My name's Brewcaster Jay, and joining me here today, we got, of course, the great Dr. Scott.
How you doing, guys?
Chris Graham from Beer, Beer, and More Beers in the studio with us today.
Excited to be here.
Cool. How are you today, Chris?
Excellent. I'm going to be John. This is my impression right now.
Okay. Very nice. Good impression. I like it.
he's had coaching.
And then, of course, the lovely Daniela in the studio with us today, too. How are you today, Daniela?
I'm a little angry, but I'm fine.
Did you mess up something in the kitchen?
I hate you. I burned my cake, but it still could taste good.
She baked it vigorously.
Yeah, you
did. No, but I did steer it vigorously.
Awesome.
Didn't catch fire, did it?
The
just
cake?
Just on the bottom.
Yeah. No, and then on the edges a little bit, but it should be fine.
Yeah?
You can still eat it. It's good enough for you.
Just put extra frosting on it.
No extra frosting. Well, I don't like frosting.
By the look of that oven, I'm surprised it doesn't just incinerate everything.
I know, and this is not my fault, by the way. It's our roommate.
Yeah, the oven doesn't even have it basically hardly has a door on it. It's got the protective like metal sheet, but none of the heat glass that's supposed to be
and
outside of that.
No outer skin on it or anything.
Yeah. I'm going to write a 5-page proposal about how they have to behave in the house now in the future, because otherwise I'm going to move out.
Well, you know, just can't be cooking up the meth on the local local oven.
They can do that outside.
Yeah. I'm just positive. I've got one of these backyards. The house is up on a hill over here in Pacheco. So pretty much the whole neighborhood can see up into my patio, and I know they don't really like us too much anyway, partly because on recycling day every other week there's like 5 barrels full of bottles out on the sidewalk, and you know, we've been known to have a party or two.
And the flamethrowers were coming.
The flamethrower didn't help when Doc was doing that in the backyard. So I know that they think I'm cooking meth back there with that system now that I got I got the burner going and steam coming out of here all the time. They don't think I'm doing anything nice.
Oh, no. They don't think you're a nice person either.
That's right. They're positive I'm supplying crack for the whole of Pacheco. I wish I was, actually, because we'd be doing a lot better here at the Brewing Network.
I know.
There might be a knock or two at the door every now and then, but we'd be doing all right.
So you guys are excited about the Oscars?
What?
I was actually going to write into the forum and say, guys, should we cancel tonight's show? Because we don't want to compete with the Oscars.
It's true. It's hard to compete with. Yeah, it was real tough to bring myself away from the pregame show.
I know. You like it so much.
Is that what they call it in the Oscars? Is it the pregame show?
Is Joan Rivers still doing that?
I think so. She
nice.
Still does it. Oh, she's funny. She's just like skin, and that's it.
Yeah, but it's very tight skin now.
It is.
It's been stretched a few times.
It used to be skin and bones, and now it really just looks like skin.
Ugh, gross.
It's a weird thing. All right, we got a good show planned for you today. It's the high gravity beer show, Doc.
Excellent.
Yeah. High gravity beers is our topic today, and Peter Zine from Alesmith Brewing Company, they're out of San Diego, California, he's going to be calling in at 6 o'clock because they got a whole lineup of real nice bottle-conditioned high-gravity beers, and we're going to talk all about those and how to get a hold of their beer and stuff like that. And, of course, Doc's planned a great discussion for us today so that we can learn how to do some high-gravity things ourselves.
And not get in too much trouble doing it.
Exactly. Speaking of high gravity, my beer the other day, I brewed on Friday night.
Yeah.
Was I was like 15 points off my target gravity, and it wasn't even supposed to be high gravity.
Did you learn to brew from JP, or how did that happen?
Yeah, it was mine and JP's recipe. No, I just, you know, I think I diluted it. I'm still learning how much water I'm supposed to put in my system, and I changed my boil time this brew from 90 to 60, so I got less boil off. I was going for 1054, and I ended up with barely 1040. And maybe
that's a Jameel beer.
Yeah, exactly. It's like water.
Yeah, you did the opposite of JP then.
Does he usually end up with super gravity?
Well, he got that Imperial Porter making a porter.
Yeah, oh, right. That a boy. Well, the problem is, I don't mind so much if it ends up being a low alcohol beer. The problem is the amount of hops I put in really needed that 1054 to not be I was going for an American pale ale on the high end of the hop side, but not an IPA. I got IPA water is what I think I have now. Like, there's probably going to be no body and all bitter.
Idiot pale ale.
Yeah, that's what mine is. So we'll see. I'll drink all 10 gallons of it, I'm sure. I'll be fine. I'll have to drink it all at once to catch a buzz, I think. But I could probably do that anyway.
Sure, why not? Let's get the beer bong out.
A couple of announcements to make here. Skype is finally working here at the Brewing Network, and it's a beautiful thing. If you don't know what Skype is, just go to Skype.com. It's free. And it's voice over internet, basically. It's like using your telephone, but it's for free. And it's a lot better. As long as you're calling people on, you know, other people on the internet, it's all free all over the world. And the clarity is amazing. We did a couple tests on it during the Blue Show this morning, Doc. And it was like Oz called in from Australia. It was like he was sitting here in the studio. Real clear. It's nice.
He wasn't slurring or anything?
No. Well, he was. It was a short conversation. So our Skype name here is The Brewing Network. So if you do have Skype, go ahead and look for the name, The Brewing Network, and you can call us up. The one thing is, though, it's on the computer, obviously, and if I'm not looking at the screen, I'm not going to hear you calling in. So it's possible you won't get answered. But as much as we can, we'll do a little Skype segment and let you guys call in and check it out. In fact, anytime during this intro, if someone wants to call in just to give it a good test, that'd be fine. Just ring into The Brewing Network. If it's your first time using Skype, don't call us, all right?
But basically, Justin's got a new toy and wants to use it.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be a good way to be able to host shows with people that aren't even in the studio. And I think it's going to be actually bring a whole lot to the Brewing Network and to the beer community that we do, because the phone system just isn't always clear enough. And if it's almost as clear as being in the studio with us, we can literally have co-hosts do the whole show with us from other places, you know, and it'd be just like they're here.
He's kicking you out, Scott.
Yeah. In other words, Doc, Skype's your replacement.
Doc Skype.
What's our Skype name?
The Brewing Network.
Perfect. Yeah.
Just search for The Brewing Network, and we'll take your
calls. How'd you come up with that?
I don't know. Sometimes I have bright moments.
Wow.
Not often, but occasionally. First question coming in from the chat room is why I didn't join the Gay Pride Parade today in Australia. And the answer is I'm here. Had I been in Australia, you can be sure I would have been there.
You could have Skyped it in.
I could have Skyped over to the game. Should do that next year.
I'm sure Jameel's pasting you into a picture as we speak. So.
Yeah,
just exactly. Like being there.
You're still proud, though, right?
Oh, I still have lots of pride. I'm very proud, and I wish I could have been there. Oz, are you there, buddy?
Hey, mate. How you going?
Oh, it's going real well. How are you?
Good. I just can't leave this Skype thing alone.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
You haven't slept in 3 days.
Yeah. I haven't.
I'm Skyping everybody.
I was sitting up waiting for Nancy boy Justin last night, but he passed out.
Yeah, we were going to do a late night. We were just going to get on the air at like 2 a.m. and just talk over Skype, host our own show, not tell anybody about it, and then deny the whole thing this morning.
Yeah.
Never happened.
Hey, I've got another brewcaster impersonation, one that you can't plagiarize.
Okay.
This is Doc.
I plagiarized
Oz's
impersonation.
Before he gets into the studio.
Okay, go ahead.
This is Doc. Freaking out.
Doc taking bong rips on his way to the studio.
I just had to do that one. Sorry, Doc.
That's great. Getting lots of Skypers signing on here, so we'll take a few calls as soon as I can get to it.
Excellent. I'll let you go.
Yeah, if I would have done that on the way in, I probably wouldn't have had as much road rage as I had trying to get here.
Yeah. Hey, Oz, did you go to the Australian Pride Parade today?
No, look, I was looking out for you down there, and you didn't show up.
Yeah, sorry about that. I was hungover.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, buddy.
Cheers, mate.
We'll see you. So there you go. Clear as a bell, huh?
Yeah, wow.
Not bad. So a good way to take phone calls now. We still got the 800 number, of course. If you don't have Skype, you can still call us. 888-401-BEER.
Or if you're too messed up to actually Skype.
Mm. I see Jameel on there right now. Maybe we should call Jameel. Let's call the kid and see if let's see what's doing with old Jameel today. Isn't he supposed to be in Europe already?
No, he's in the chat room.
Oh, he is?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm ringing him, but he's not answering.
Figured he'd have the whole family in rubber gloves and masks and doing something.
Yeah, they're all in those like cryogenic suits.
We're propagating today.
Yeah, no answer from Jameel, so we'll just hang up on that guy. That's all right. So I just wanted to announce that we do have the Skype thing. Call me throughout the show at various times, and I'll see if I can answer. All right? A little bit of feedback today, Doc. You're one of your favorite segments, right?
Yeah.
Especially when they like you.
Do we ever find out who was the Jameel?
You know, we didn't find out, but I think I know who the Jameel is.
Did we stop getting...
We stopped getting them, so I guess I might as well go ahead and give my...
Your guess.
My guess. We stopped getting the anonymous Jameel letters.
I like those.
Right during the same week that Doc vanished for his anniversary. I usually get them either Saturday night or Sunday morning. They arrive in my email box, and Doc was gone that weekend. It was the first week in like 4 weeks that we didn't get one.
Pure coincidence.
On top of that, when Doc missed my reading of The Silent Jameel, he came late to the show a couple of weeks back and missed the whole reading of The Silent Jameel. After the show, he said, hey, did you get a Silent Jameel this week? And I said, yeah, here it is. And he said, no, I need you to read it. It's always funny when you read it. Like this big thing about I read it differently.
I remember that, yeah.
And now, when he stopped coming and he was gone, I put two and two together, and I basically think that it's, you know, he already he wrote the damn thing. He doesn't want to read it himself. He wants to hear how I do it. The thing is, I was also given a clue that there's more than one person involved. So it's Doc and somebody else. And I don't know who the other person is, per se, but I think that half of the group is Doc. So, Doc, would you like to, either deny or confirm?
Confirm or deny, yeah. We'll do neither.
You'll do neither?
Neither.
You're just going to stay silent?
Oh, yeah. It makes the mystery better.
You see? Clue number three. Silent Doc. Anonymous Jameel.
I want to hear more.
What?
Well, I'm not getting any more, and if you want to hear more, you might need to write some more. But I don't know who the... Chris has got a funny look in his face. Maybe he's partner number two.
Oh, no. I got my suspicions, though.
About Doc as well?
No. I was thinking a team of him and JP, but that was...
Yeah, JP's definitely on the possible list, but...
But you know what?
I don't know.
Maybe it's Dr. Scott's wife.
There's not enough insults about Doc.
Yeah, that's true. But she really hates you, and there's a lot of insults about you. Yeah, and she was gone that weekend as well.
She doesn't really hate him. She just thinks he's gay.
Everybody does, though.
Two completely different things.
Maybe it's Dr. Scott's wife.
Yeah, could be. I don't know.
Oh, my God!
You've got mail.
Kick ass.
Well, we did get some mail this week, so why don't we go ahead and do that? Just a couple of things here. This one's kind of funny. Guys, I've been listening to the archives for about a month now. Managed to get about 10 shows under my belt. On last week's episode, you mentioned that you were drinking PBR, Pabst Blue Ribbon, for those of you who aren't in the know. If this is true, you guys are the shit. I love craft beer just as much as all the other drunks that listen to your show, but damn sure that there is always a spot for a couple of PBRs in my fridge, right next to the Great Divides, Dogfish Heads, New Belgium, Sam Adams, and of course my own brew. Anyway, like what you guys are doing, and the show is awesome. And that's from Jesse Seals from Denver, Colorado. Well, I would love to take credit for that, but I was forced to drink the Pabst Blue Ribbon. There is usually a Pabst in the fridge, though, for JP and a couple other people who don't mind drinking a Pabst Blue Ribbon.
There's a place next to the Shark Tank. You can't drink next to the Shark Tank without paying $6 a pint or so.
Right.
They have all this great British beer on in the lineup, and they have Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Gotcha.
$6 a pitcher.
Is that right?
So JP and I, every time we go down there, we have to have one.
Oh, of course. For $6, you can't go wrong, I guess.
The whole pitcher.
The Shark Tank, by the way, is San Jose Sharks playing hockey out here.
Go Sharks.
So there you go. They're doing real well this year, too, aren't they? All right. This one, Doc, is about the Friday show a little bit. We did a bit on there. We like to do, which is going to bring me to another point, by the way. We like to do bits on the Friday show where we make our listeners participate and do some crazy things and have a little fun with the beer industry instead of just information. In fact, it's completely devoid of information, let's face it.
Well, that was the whole point, wasn't it?
That's the point of the show. And a couple weeks back, one of the bits that we did was to have somebody smoke hops on the air with us. Just, we've talked about it on the air, but
right.
We've never actually had anybody do it. So
many people have admitted to it.
Right. So we figure, hey, we'll give away a prize. Call in, smoke it on the air with us. So somebody called in and smoked Amarillo hops through a clogged up pipe. Oh, you could hear it like whistling through the thing, right?
How'd the pipe get all hot? how'd it get clogged in the first place?
Yeah, I don't know.
It was your old pipe.
Well, this says, love the bit about burning some Amarillo on the air. And by the way, one of your previous guests said that you need to vaporize it. So maybe you can get one of the West Coasters to try that. You know, the old vaporizer?
Yeah.
Where it actually just turns it right, turns all the good stuff right into vapor. You can smoke
the volcano.
It right up. Yeah, well, we could see if someone wants to do that. I want someone to use a bubbler, like a 2-foot bubbler. You know, one where you got to stand on a chair to get to it or something.
The assassin.
Yeah, exactly, the assassin. He says, seriously, though, how about a Sunday show dedicated to brewing with the cousin? Info on this is a bit thin on the ground. For instance, can it be brewed with just like hops? Boiling it to isomerize, quantities recommended, could you dry hop with the cuz? I suppose that there is an infusion method, maybe. I'm dying to try this, but would like to find out if anyone else has experience in it before committing. So much for you selling advertising. By the way, please don't read off my name. Friend of a friend. I won't read his name. I'll respect his wishes. So, brewing with the cuz, Doc. What do you think?
I don't want to boil it. Definitely don't boil with it.
No?
No.
Why do you say that?
No, because it'll kill the THC. You don't want to do that. You want to try to keep that intact. Depending on what you're trying to brew with
sure.
it for. You want
but would it, do you
the
think,
essence of hops, or do you want the effect of hops?
Do you think there would be any bittering?
No.
No bittering aspects whatsoever?
No, just probably more grassiness
and
harsh, kind of grassy.
So it's probably more of a dry hopper than a boiler.
Yeah, and there's ways to get that out of there.
Hop tea. You can tea it.
By soaking it and wringing it out a couple of times, and then the oils will stay in there.
Yeah.
And you want to get the water-soluble things out before you dry hop with it.
Have you done this?
I'm confirming nor denying.
You are confirming nor denying?
I'm neither confirming nor denying.
I tasted it, but I did not swallow.
Yeah, that's going to be on the forum.
I meant inhale.
Yeah.
Damn it, Jamil. Don't listen.
Exactly.
Unite.
That's funny. I think the biggest problem with doing it is how expensive of a batch of beer it would be.
I think that's what he meant by commit.
I mean, if you're talking, if you got a dry hop with, say, an ounce of the good cuz, man, you're talking about some dough.
Well, if he's home brewing, maybe he's homegrown.
Yeah, that's true. You might just have all the ingredients at home. All right. We're not going to do a Sunday show about brewing with the cuz, but tell you what, we'll keep talking about it to random people. If I find out that anybody's tried it, I'll ask them a few questions, and we'll keep you up to date. That sound good? I don't think we should do a whole cousin show.
No.
That's on our other network, the Cousin Network. That's coming soon. High Times is going to be our sponsor for that. All right. So that's all the news I got, or the feedback, rather, I got for you today. I do have a couple news stories. But first, Chris, you want to you teach, this is a question that's already come through from the chat room, that you teach that course in Colorado once a year, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
At the Siebel.
Siebel Brewing Institute does a home brewing class in Durango, Colorado once a year.
Okay. And that's all, it's just straight homebrewing class? You just give the basics and the...
Oh, no, it's far from basics.
Is it? Okay.
Chris White does a whole day in the lab, so you're...
Go ahead.
You got a whole day in the lab under the microscope, learning how to be truly sterile as opposed to us homebrewers. Randy Moser teaches most of the class, and I teach all the practical side of the class.
That's about a week, okay. Isn't it?
It's 5 days.
Okay.
How many students?
23 last year, and a lot of drinking.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, I talked to you a few nights at the end, and yeah, it's a lot of drinking.
terrible time. Durango, Colorado is the most beautiful place I've ever been.
Nice. All right, you know what? I gotta skip the news here for a sec. I didn't know if we were going to get this phone call, so I didn't announce it, but we've got Sean O'Sullivan on the line from 21st Amendment.
You know, I was just going to say, we haven't heard from old Sean in a while.
And he is in Belgium,
actually. Oh, wow.
So he's going to give us a report about what's been going on. Sean, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you great. How are you?
Sounds great.
I'm doing well. Actually, I'm not in Belgium anymore. I'm sitting in here in Koblenz, Germany. I'm right on the Rhine River. It's 2 o'clock in the morning.
Nice.
And I'm getting on a plane in about 5 hours and fly back, but I've been out here for the last week or so, all through Germany, down through Ardennes, and up to Belgium. I've been to Brussels and Bruges, and the Zythos Festival is this two-day festival up in Saint-Nicolas, just outside of Antwerp. And there's about, I'd say there's probably 500 beers there.
Wow.
And it's kind of like their GABF of Belgium, and it's just out of this world.
So it's just a whole festival bringing those Belgians together?
Yeah, exactly. There's probably about 50 breweries there, and they all bring different types of beers. You just try the most amazing beers from the smallest breweries you've ever tasted in Belgium. It's just outrageous. Outrageous.
You bring back any ideas?
I don't brew a lot of Belgian beers, but I got to tell you, I've had a lot of Kolsch on this trip.
Nice. because you got to make up for the nights of Belgium.
What's that?
You got to make up for all those big Belgians with a little Kolsch.
Yeah, exactly. You really do. It's funny because we got into Frankfurt about a week ago and went to Köln and drove into their carnival. Had no idea this party was going on in the city. And it was like everybody's dressed up walking around. Jen and I were like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
And finally we discovered that the entire city was having this party. And it was the Germans, Daniel, I got to tell you. Aside from the breakfasts alone, I mean, I think I'm studying to be, a part Orson Welles would play or something. It's huge now.
Feeling a little bloated.
The eggs.
Oh, it's great
food. It's good, huh?
It's unbelievable. But this beer festival has been great. I mean, it's almost like the Belgians have been doing this for so long, and they have all these different styles of beer. They have that you really don't get in any other country, except for the U.S. in a lot of ways.
Right.
You got your lagers, you got your ales, but Belgian beers are just so unique, and they're so clever with them, and the flavors they add, the types of spices and everything, it's just amazing. It was actually a really great story. The sort of the double IPA is sort of taking off here, or that's trying to take off here.
In Belgium?
The concept of the Imperial IPA. We went down to a Schoof and met with the owner, Chris, down there, and I actually muled a bunch of model airplane parts back for him from the United States because he wanted to save some money. So we became good friends, kind of emailing each other back and forth. We ended up going down there, and I was the first American brewer to try the new Dublin IPA.
Oh, that's great.
And it was kind of interesting. It was like I was sitting in this tasting room with all these Schoof brewers, and they were, all looking at me. In fact, they were shooting, because it's being designed just for the American market.
Okay.
And they were taking pictures of me as I was drinking this. It was the weirdest thing.
That's
and
great.
I was sitting there looking like, how is he going to react?
Wow.
It was strange.
Will it be the first exported IPA from Belgium, you think?
I think it might be the first export from Belgium that's called IPA. And
okay.
It is a double IPA. It doesn't, I got to tell you, I tasted it. It doesn't taste anything like the beer you had here. In fact, I had a bottle of my Double Trouble that I think you've had before.
Yep, good
Justin,
beer.
And it was one of those moments in time that I'll never forget, where you're sitting there and you open it up and they taste it and they're like, oh. it was like it awed the room.
Wow.
And it's interesting because they are actually adding they're adding two American hops to this to their Dublin IPA. They're adding what is it? Amarillo and Tomahawk.
Oh,
as
nice.
Well as Saaz. So it doesn't smell any. They're not trying to do a clone of double IPAs. Their version of it. It's very bitter. That's the big criticism I had of it, or concern, is that it was very bitter.
Right.
And it still had the Eshoof kind of quality to it, the yeast from the yeast aroma.
Oh, really? So does it still have a bit of a sour thing too?
The Eshoof isn't so sour like you find in a Guz or. From Cantillon or Hansen's or something like that. It's more of a, it's more of that kind of banana phenolic ester that you might get from their house strain yeast.
Okay, gotcha.
But
it's like an IPA.
It was amazing. And these guys at Eshoof, they're kind of like the Fritz Maytags. I consider them the Fritz Maytags of brewing. And you think they'd be kind of all clothes and all this, and they're just freaking crazy.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
And then another interesting story is that a lot of breweries in Belgium are being sort of saved by the American market in a lot of ways. Cantillon up in Brussels, 25% of our entire exports actually go to the U.S. Wow. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's a huge number, 25% coming out of here. Well, there's such a big push with the Belgians here now that that's a good thing, to help them out over there. And I don't know the number of how many breweries per capita in Belgium, but it's huge. There's so many brewers out there that it's
oh yeah.
Well, it's nice that they're getting that kind of press that it comes over here and we're drinking more over here because it's saving an industry over there.
Yeah,
a lot of it's real small breweries, stuff that could easily go under.
Right.
So
yeah, it's interesting because it kind of turned into a little buying event for me, because I was walking around and then I was being approached by these importers from the U.S.
Yeah,
found out who I was, and it ended up being a it kind of became this little thing. Like, I just started writing things down of stuff I'd like to carry at the 21st Amendment. I had carried Belgian beers in the past, especially around the holidays, but I think now I'm going to start. Having a nice little bottle selection to sort of augment my or supplement my current draft lineup.
Sure, it's a great idea.
But you guys got to come over here. I mean, Dr. Stott, this is definitely like the Burning Man of Belgium, the European beer festivals. I mean, it's insane, and these guys are insane. You're in St. Nicolaas is a small little town right outside of Antwerp, between the Bruges and Antwerp, it's a smoky little building, and it's just crazy.
How'd you like Bruges?
Bruges, to me, is one of my favorite cities. I've been here three times now, and there's a little bar there called the Little Bear that's owned by this woman named Daisy, and it's sort of like the Toronado of beer bars in Europe, specializing in Belgian beers.
That's great.
With the exception that it seems more civilized in a lot of ways. You can smoke in there, of course, like in most Belgian beers, which I understand the law's about to change, but, there's no loud music, and the bartenders are relatively, nice to you. So
that's always
I spent about 4 days in Bruges, and I just loved it there.
Nice.
And, I'd order a beer, and they'd always caution me because they think I'm an American, and I'm used to drinking Budweiser, and they caution me, oh, that's a very strong beer, sir. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. All right, just hand it over, lady. Yeah, Sean,
another thing.
Are you bringing back, like, suitcases full of beer or what?
Yes. I think I have to throw some of my clothes away.
Yeah, party at Sean's next week. It's great.
I think Sean needs to be a guest in here pretty soon.
Yeah. Exactly.
Another cool thing, through the U.S. importer I contacted before I left, I was able to actually get a tour of Chimay. In fact, we were supposed to stay at the actual Abbey. I remember Vinny mentioning that he and Natalie had stayed there. So I had this all set up, but we got trapped in Eshoof because of snow and beer. but it was great. We showed up there. Amazing. The Trappist breweries are unbelievable. We had the opportunity to get a tour of Chimay, quietest place in the world. It's not like a brewery you've ever seen. There's, you know, they don't even have the bottling line there. What they do is they put the beer in trucks, send it 10 kilometers away, and have it bottled there because, as you know, bottling machines make a lot of noise.
Yeah, they just want to quiet.
Yeah, then when we were driving up to up through Ashuf, we went to Chimay, then we drove up through drove by Rodenbach, decided we'd stop, not Rodenbach, Rochefort, on our way up, and the gate was open. So I said to Jen, let's just walk in. What are they going to do, kick us out?
Sure.
Yeah.
So went in there and checked it out, and the brothers are kind of one guy walks by, and they have like a vow of silence, so they don't say anything. So I just said, hey, how you doing? And not a word, walked right by me.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a beautiful facility, and it's been snowing here, so it's kind of been this sort of picturesque kind of going through the countryside in Belgium, aside from the opportunity to drive over 110 miles an hour.
That's the best part, too, the Autobahn. Now, I got to ask you, we asked Vinny, I have to ask you hypothetically, though, because he actually made it to stay the night in the monastery. Were you planning on doing any naughty business in the room there? if they were going to
let you in? I got to tell you, I remember him saying that.
Yeah.
I even thought about that for a moment or two because, well, you know, I'm a guy. And,
you probably didn't think about it for a moment or two.
Go ahead. I think I probably would have gone right to hell, and I think that wouldn't have been a good thing.
You know what, Sean? You're probably going there anyway. Yep. I think you should have gone.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I'm trying to lessen the blow, so.
Right. I'll tell you what, I ever stay in a monastery, I'm having sex, even if it's with myself.
Yeah.
one way or another, I'm doing it.
Or another man.
One of the brothers.
The vow of silence ends.
Yeah. I'll make you talk.
I'll bet.
Justin, it sounds like you've been watching too much German porn.
Yeah, my bad. Daniela brought over a suitcase of it when she came here, so what are you going to do?
You know, there's a whole contingent of American brewers over here right now. Sam from Dogfish Head and Vinny and Tommy Arthur are here, along with Rob Todd from Allagash. Sam, who you know is a big beer writer, he wrote a book on how he opened up Dogfish Head.
Yeah.
Is writing a book on extreme beers. So these guys have been kind of going a couple different cities and sort of bringing their beers over, their Belgian-style beers. You can't say Belgian beers when you're from America if you're beers. You have to say Belgian-style beers from America.
Oh, right. Got
so I haven't had, actually, it's funny because I keep meaning to run into them, and we keep missing them. We're like on the opposite side of the country when they're somewhere. So
yeah, that's what my friends tell me sometimes when I'm supposed to meet up with them. I usually find out later, Sean, it's that they're avoiding me.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Man, that just sounds awesome. I really appreciate the report. What's the festival called? The whole thing?
It's called the Zythos Festival.
Okay.
And it's a 2-day. It used to be called the 24-hour beer festival, and it was held in Antwerp a few years back until the location burned down. So it's called the Zythos Festival, which is a beer organization, I believe, here.
Okay.
And it runs 2 days. It runs Saturday from noon to midnight, and then on Sunday it ran from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m.
That sounds great. What a trip, man.
Which was this last night. I mean, it's over now. It's like 2:30 in the morning here. So
now grab a last couple of beers and get on the plane, my friend.
And don't
exactly. Hopefully I can get the seatbelt around my gut.
Hey, and Sean, did you get the gift for me already from my home country?
Yes, of course. I've already taken care of it, Daniel.
Good boy. So I'll see you soon, then.
What are they, like clogs or something? What are you
German doing? Cousin.
Yeah.
Hey, that's my German cousin.
Yeah. Nice. Hey, thanks a lot, Sean. That's really cool. I appreciate it.
All right, guys. I'll talk to you when you get back. I've been listening to the show over here. It sounds great so far, by the way.
Oh, very good. Thank you for that.
Silent Jamil.
That's right.
Thanks for staying up.
All right.
All right, we'll see you in a couple of days, man.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Oh, that's cool. What a trip. Lucky bastard.
Yeah.
He called me yesterday. First thing, I just answered the phone. The first thing he says is, I'm on a train going from Belgium to Bruges right now. First thing I said was, you are a dick.
Well, you did the same thing. We didn't go to Belgium then, but we had a good trip there, too. Yeah. And we're going to go again, you know.
Oh, that's real cool. And good for him, too.
Yeah.
And I like that he's going to kind of, you know, that he's meeting up with people to import their beer here, too. Kind of straight to the brew pub there. That's a good idea. So maybe a couple exclusive beers over at 21st Amendment here soon.
I like he's going to bring us beer.
Yeah. How much are you allowed to bring? You know, there's actually a limit. So if they do search your bag, they'll take it out. But the thing is, they don't search that often.
The problem is right now, I think, with all the imports from Europe is, seriously, I got to say, the chicken disease that's going on in Europe because American customs is going to freak out.
Yeah,
so anything you bring right now is going to be a hassle on him.
Yeah, well, I hope he...
Knowing him, he's going to try it anyway.
Yeah, he'll make it through.
It's really good if you have a stopover somewhere on the East Coast because they don't search you there. They just say, whatever. But if you fly directly into San Francisco, it's a pain from Europe. Yeah. They do. They have those dogs there and everything.
They do full cavity search.
Yeah, but the dogs aren't smelling for Belgian beer.
You never know.
I guess that's true.
They like beer, too.
You never do know. I think we got the Jay-Z trying to call in here. Hey, Jamil.
Hey, Justin.
How are you, buddy?
All right. How are you?
Doing real good. Got your meal on the Skype now.
Just like he's here in the studio.
Absolutely.
Sound all right?
Yeah. You don't even have to drive down here anymore, I don't think, Jamil.
Oh, I like going down there. Good.
It's a lot
enjoying the beer and everything.
Yeah, that's good. What's happening, my friend?
My wife was listening to the archive, and she said how talented and professional you were.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Are you sure she listened to our archive?
Yeah, I wasn't sure of that. You know,
there's a lot of other beer shows out there. She might have been listening to somebody else.
Was she drinking?
Heavily.
Well, that's cool. She was awesome when she called in, and I tried to get her to say lots of bad things about you, Jamil, but she wouldn't have it.
Yeah, and I told her to say all sorts of bad things, and she just wouldn't. I handed her the phone, told her to say nasty things, and walked away. And,
right.
I was kind of disappointed. I thought she'd really bring a lot more to it.
She likes you, I guess. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, I guess. Well,
she thinks you're a nice guy. So you're about to go do the Europe thing, too.
Yeah, a similar trip.
Are you? Kind of going to the same places?
Yeah, we're going to go London, Paris, up to Bruges, and through the Netherlands. I got some friends there, and then back down into Germany and down the Rhine. And but Daniela was telling me they just had a meter of snow in southern Germany.
Yeah, my mom just told me today.
Saw the pictures of it.
It's pretty, though.
Lots of snow, man.
Me and my three-wheel Peugeot rental car.
Jamil, I've never had another car, and I've always been fine without snow tires, without everything. You just drive it on the Autobahn. Everything is cool.
Well, you're German. That's,
I know.
The car Jamil will be driving around Europe is the size of Doc's hood on his Hummer. It's literally like that big. You got to strap all the luggage to the roof.
And the whole family in there.
Yeah. How big's the family, Jamil?
Four people.
That's great in a Peugeot. Perfect.
Do they even make those things anymore?
Of course they do. It's a great car. My first car actually was a Peugeot 205.
Is that right?
Did it have four wheels or three? I think this one's three.
I love that.
You should get one of those smart cars, Jamil.
Yeah, those are nice. Those are real nice little smart cars.
Jamil and I worked on a little present for you here, Justin.
Oh, you did? Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh. It's a Brewing Network t-shirt with a couple of the lunch meat photos that are available in the beer radio section of our forum. Of course, the one with me bending over in front of JP. Thanks for that, guys. And then the grab ass photo on the back. I have to wear this too, don't I?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Like to the next, you know, beer fest I go to or something. Wow. Thanks, guys.
They'll recognize you.
I don't know what to say.
Wear it to the next Pride Fest.
Yeah. I might put it on at the break, as a matter of fact. I'll send you a picture of me in it, Jamil, and then you can do something with that picture, too. It's like a dirty picture within a dirty picture.
It's like looking in a mirror and a mirror and a mirror and a mirror.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that going to be your favorite sleep shirt now?
Yeah, I'll wear it to bed.
That's hot.
No, that's really
I don't like that picture.
I was going to put it on the one with the man boobs, but I thought that'd be you couldn't wear it out in public.
Yeah, and not only that, that one literally, of all the pictures, that one actually disgusts me. It's gross. I actually get a gagging sensation Never mind. Scratch that last remark. I just want to puke when I see the boob picture. That one's gross.
Speaking of man boobs, check the forum again.
Oh, boy.
Everybody check the forum for Jamil's handiwork. When do you leave, my friend?
The 11th.
Okay. So
next Saturday.
Next Saturday. You're out of here. And how long?
18 days.
Okay. That's a nice little trip you got there.
All those people that want to burglarize my house.
Yeah, there you go.
Just announce it on the air.
They're not going to take anything but the beer.
Yeah, exactly. And, Doc, you're covering the show for 2 weeks then.
Yeah.
All right.
The Wit Show and an Oktoberfest show.
And is your wit going to be ready for the show next week?
Yes, it will.
Attaboy. You know what, Doc? I think you might be able to just get drunk on Sunday night and crash over here since you got to be here at 9 a.m. on Monday for showtime.
He's thinking.
I think there's an after party after next week's show. I got Dan Gordon here. And
I'll clear it with the powers that be.
There you go. Yeah, you're going to miss that one, Jamil.
I know. I didn't want to miss Dan Gordon, but oh well.
Well, you can listen from Europe. It's only 2 a.m. when we start the show.
That'll work. And then I could call in on Skype.
That would be great.
Questions.
There you go. Or, if you prefer, you can host the show. I'll take your plane ticket and head to Europe.
What's wrong with you?
Is that a no-go?
Yeah, I think that's a big negatory.
Wait. I just heard a new show right there, too, and that's the Bring Network Gay Sleepover Show.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a good idea.
It's like the after show of every Sunday show. That's a great idea. Chris, you're hired.
Monday morning, it'll look like Jonestown around here.
Oh, man. We can watch Brokeback Mountain. And
cool.
Hey, thanks, Jamil.
Thelma and Louise.
All right.
Bye, have a good trip if we don't talk to you.
Thanks.
All right, we'll see you.
Bye.
Nice shirt, you two. That's great.
Yeah, it's just cute.
Wow, what have we done for 45 minutes? Just had a couple of good laughs and talked about my gayness, as usual.
Stared at my empty beer glass forever.
Yeah, always makes for a good show. Let me ask a quick question. I didn't even get to the news. I got a couple of news stories. I'll tell you what we'll do. Ask a quick question of Chris Graham here. We'll take a break, and then we can do news for just a couple of minutes. Then we'll get Peter on the phone and just go for the high gravity from there. Everybody all right with that?
Cool.
Okay, so Graham, for you, back to the class that you teach. They're just curious how much that class is over in Durango.
Oh, good God.
Even roughly.
I think about 1,800 or so.
Oh, is that right?
And it's the accommodations are pretty nice. They're dorm rooms.
Oh, okay.
They royally suck if you're going to go stay in town.
Gotcha. And how long is the course? A week?
It's a week. And unfortunately, it's the week. It's not like a weekend that carries over.
Oh.
So you got to be dedicated for this.
Gotcha.
So Monday through Friday.
Yep.
And when are the dates of it, approximately the month?
Second to last week of July, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, a little time.
Yeah.
And when's the homebrew festival that you're not going to?
May.
The big one? That one's in May.
May 6th.
All right. Oh, lots of summer events going on. And you do that every year, Chris?
Yeah. It's pretty tough to be me sometimes. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I got to fly to Colorado again.
The Great American Beer Fest, the homebrew conferences.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, boy. You got it rough, man. All right, a quick break, and when we come back, we'll do just a couple of news stories, and then we've got Ailsmith calling in. Danielle, you got something before
we go? Yeah, I just want to say happy birthday to Henning.
Henning.
Mm-hmm.
Happy birthday,
it's
Henning.
Henning's birthday today.
Oh, okay.
Happy birthday.
How old is he? Does he want to say?
You don't ask that.
You ask dudes. It doesn't matter.
You ask how big his beer gut is. You can ask how old he is.
I would ask for the beer gut, but not for the age.
Well, there's probably an equation that you get one from the other. You know, at least with homebrewers, if he gives you your gut size, you could probably approximate how old he is.
So your gut looks like the gut of a 45-year-old.
No, not at all.
Is that like rings of a redwood? Or?
Yeah, you go by stretch marks. Every stretch mark is another year.
Some formula there.
It's got to be. Doc, get to work on that. You're the doctor here.
See 28 years.
28? Oh,
wow.
Happy birthday. He's younger than I am.
He is.
Wow. Bastard.
Probably more successful, too.
Okay.
Ouch.
That's most likely the truth.
Told you I'm angry.
It's a tough room today, folks. It's the Brewing Network. We're going to take a quick break. I got some funny stuff to play for you at the break, so hang in there. And we'll be right back. Thanks to Chris Graham for hanging out. And Ailsmith will be here in a few minutes, too.
You're listening to Three Guys.
Excuse me? What about me?
Yeah... Sorry.
You're listening to Three Guys and One Girl. Use a radio show as an excuse to drink more beer. The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Yes, sir. Welcome back. You are tuned into the Brewing Network Sunday show. Of course, we got Chris Graham hanging out with us today. And then Peter Zein from Alesmith is going to be calling us up in a few minutes. Until then, instead of starting the high gravity, we'll wait for Peter and just do a couple of news stories for you. Another beer theft this week. That's always good fun for me. I like to read about that stuff. It's a little more fun usually when people crash, too, and that's what I got here. This happened in Augusta, Maine. An Augusta man who allegedly used a stolen taxi as a getaway vehicle after stealing beer from a convenience store continued to swill beer after crashing the vehicle during a high-speed pursuit, police said Saturday. Damian Rogers, who's 33, sat in the crumpled-up taxi drinking beer and refusing orders to exit the locked vehicle, said Lieutenant Jeffrey Pomerlow. Officers had to smash the window to get him out. The episode unfolded in broad daylight after police received a report of a stolen taxi at 10:18 a.m., and then a report of beer stolen from a convenience store. Rogers led Augusta police state police on a chase reaching 80 miles per hour, which is not really that fast if you're in Germany, on Interstate 95 before he crashed. Rogers faces a number of charges, including, I like this charge, unauthorized use of a motor vehicle, failing, which is different than stealing a motor vehicle, it's unauthorized use of a motor vehicle, failing to stop for a police officer, drunken driving, and driving with a suspended driver's license, as well as outstanding warrants. It sort of reminds me, do you remember me telling you the story of that I was relayed to me in my DUI class when I got busted years ago about the person who said one way to possibly get out of a DUI is if you get pulled over and the cop comes up to the window, that before you open the window and answer the policeman banging on it, you actually crack a beer right in front of him and slam it, right? So that in front of the judge, he has to say, well, yeah, I actually did see him have a beer after he parked the car on the side of the road. So there's no way to tell whether he was
drunk while driving
or drunk after he was pulled over.
Shouldn't you throw your keys out the door first?
Yeah, you got to do both. You got to roll down the window, chuck your keys out, slam a beer. Yeah. Anyway, this guy just sat there drinking as the cops, he crashed.
Like trying to pound him down as fast as he could.
Yeah, he's like, hey, I'm going to spend the next 6 hours in the cell. I might as well get hammered real quick.
That's probably why he could only go 80 miles an hour. He's trying to drive with one, drink with the other.
Yeah, that might be true. That might be true.
I got a great DUI story if you want to hear it.
Hey, if there's such a thing, I'd love to hear it.
Well, it involves no one you guys know.
Okay,
I won't mention his name. It did happen in Walnut Creek.
Okay.
So this guy's out, Krogan's, I think, meets up with this girl, thinks she's hot, blah, blah, blah. His roommate takes him home because he's wasted.
Okay.
His roommate doesn't take him home yet. He gets in his car and tries to drive to her house because he got her address from her. Cops pick him up. Take him to jail. His roommate comes, gets him out of jail,
okay.
Brings him home. His roommate goes to sleep. He takes unauthorized use, basically,
sure.
Of his roommate's car.
Okay.
And is driving again to go see her.
Okay.
And gets pulled over again. And the cop's just, like, looking at him like,
wow.
Are you kidding me?
Like, yeah. Yeah, seriously.
Two in one night.
That's unbelievable. You know, I've heard that happen in Arizona, my folks live out there. It gets a little redneck sometimes in certain parts of Arizona. And same thing, guy got busted twice in one night. Because often, like when I got in trouble, they let me go that night too. Someone, as long as somebody picks you up, they won't always make you spend the night in jail. I of course then went home and had a beer and went to sleep. But some people get out when they get picked up and then hit the road again. They run out of beer or whatever. This guy wanted to get laid real bad, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
I think after that ordeal and you got the sure thing going, yeah I did too.
Did
get a cab.
Do you know if he ever got some action?
I don't think so. Not that night.
They probably arrested
him. Maybe he did, but it was in the holding tank.
Yeah, right. It wasn't the action he was
They weren't letting him go home after that.
Oh, that's funny. Little news story from Tanzania. I like to do stories from all over as much as I can find them, and as much as I'm interested in them being American and not caring about most of the rest of the world.
Is it Tanzania, Africa?
Yeah. Is there another one?
No, but it sounds funny in English.
Okay. And it's about Tanzanian homebrewers. They're ignoring a ban on using grain in popular local alcoholic drinks because of food shortages. The country requires more than 100,000 tons of grain to feed itself for the next 3 months. But there's been a drought, so there's an extreme shortage in grain. Now, I'm not going to read through
but
the whole story.
But then they're probably very thirsty, too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the gist of the deal is that the commercial brewers that are there, and I think that there's two of them in Tanzania, they don't have to adhere to the regulations that are cutting down the amount of grain. A, because 40% of each of the brewery is owned by the government, and B, the other 60% is owned by a government in another part of Africa, right? So there's no shortage for their grain. They can use up as much as they want, which I think there's actually a number here of how much they use. But the homebrewers, they've made the local communities of much poorer people who don't buy this commercial beer, the lower-income people, usually buy family's homebrew for like 25 cents a liter. And a lot of these families use that as their main source of income. You know, for example, the husband might go to work for a very low income job. The wife would stay home and brew beer and then sell it for 25 cents a liter. And they've put a ban on them using it, on doing it at all. They don't want them to use any grain. Now, all of us as homebrewers know what a small amount of grain ends up being used in a batch of homebrew, and especially compared to the amount of grain that gets used by a major brewery, right? And these are the guys that they're banning, you know, just the homebrewers. And they're basically just quoted to say that, you know, people have to be fed, but they also need to socialize, are some of the quotes that the Tanzanian homebrewers are saying. And, yeah, it's just about I guess it's some 3.5 million Tanzanians are going hungry. And much of the country is also experiencing daytime power cuts as the drought has left hydroelectric plants short of water.
All right, not to sound cruel. I mean, I know going hungry is bad and not having electricity is bad, yeah, but come on, yeah. Take away alcohol?
Exactly.
How are you going to deal with that?
It's exactly the time that you need alcohol. I mean, you make an excellent point. It's not too harsh to say at all. It's exactly the time you need a nice cold beer. So, I don't know. I just think that it's a bit interesting that the government is kind of going.
Look, there's probably nothing nice or cold about it.
Yeah, that's sad.
I'm going to start marketing to Tanzania.
There you go. Start selling homebrew over there. Last little news story. We only got a couple of minutes. I thought I'd try some German on you, Daniela. It's about the World Cup that's going on in Germany.
This right. Year. You know, a little pretty excited about that.
A little soccer action or Fußball.
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 Or football, as the rest of the world calls it, but
right.
You.
Well, in England, football fans heading to Germany for the World Cup are getting free language classes. Mein Hobbys sind Fußball sehen, Bier trinken und schlafen.
Those are good hobbies.
That's good.
What did I just say, Danielle?
That your hobby was watching soccer,
drinking
beer, and
sleeping.
That's right. And this is the kind of thing that the class is teaching them. It's nothing about conjugating verbs or proper sentences. It's just the basics of how to get there. And then a little bit of football speak, like abseits.
Offsides.
Offsides, right. Just let it ring. Whoever's oh, no, you know what? You got to get that. And just tell them to hold on a second. That's probably Peter from Ailsmith calling in to do our interview with him, too. There's lots of other. Maybe, Doc, you can take a guess at a couple of these. Let's see. What do we got here? Well, Danielle is back on the line here, too. Is that Peter for us?
No.
Oh, okay. It's not.
It's somebody criticizing you.
Oh, that's fine. They can hold on a second then. abseits.
Offside.
Yeah.
Abseits, you idiot.
Die Blamage.
What?
You have to say it like that.
What is that?
Die Blamage.
Ah, die Blamage. The embarrassment.
Yeah, or disgrace.
Or humiliation, even.
How about this? This is what I normally...
He knows nothing
Blamage.
About.
This is what I normally do during the show, and what I'm doing right now, as a matter of fact. Die Spielverzögerung.
Die Spielverzögerung.
Yeah.
You sound like such an idiot.
What does that mean?
That means a lag in the game, how the game is proceeding. You
is
know?
It wasting time, the equivalent
it is,
of time
it
wasting?
It is kind of wasting time, yeah.
Daniela?
Delay of game.
Yes.
Wer wird Weltmeister?
Germany.
Mm-hmm. That was who will win the World Cup.
Exactly. No doubt this year. We're gonna get it.
Shiri, bist du blind?
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 Blind. Are you blind?
Yeah. Ref, it's to the ref.
Yeah, ref. Referee, are you blind?
Shiri, wir wissen, wo dein Auto steht.
Referee, we know where your car is parked.
So this is
that's a very typical one in German stadiums. You got like 65,000 dudes and girls in the stadium all yelling, Shiri, we know where your car is parked. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And then I'll give you one more. This is actually a question for you, Daniela. Wer ist dein Lieblingsspieler? Spieler.
Mehmet Scholl. He's not going to participate this year, though.
No. That's Daniela's favorite player.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. That's the German that the Brits are learning to go over. It's all free, and they get to participate in German chanting.
Speaking of the World Cup, did you hear that they would not allow people to have beer in the first place while they're watching the games?
I did hear that.
Yeah, and now Anheuser-Busch started pressuring the soccer organization so much that now one beer a person is allowed.
Ah, how big a beer?
No German beer size. Yeah.
I would say it doesn't, no matter what, it's not big enough. That's a long football game.
Well, and it's fine, because how are they even going to notice if somebody had a beer before or not? You're not drunk after a beer, so you go ahead and just buy it.
Yeah, yeah.
Or your kid goes and buy it.
Or they give you
buys
token,
it. You know,
tokens.
We don't have, like, we don't get carded when we buy beer.
So you're bribing 5-year-olds for more beer.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we got to clear up this phone line and get to Peter. He's going to be calling in any second. Call, are you there?
I'm here, man. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Who are we talking to?
This is St. Taurus, man.
Hey, St. Taurus. What's happening?
Oh, nothing much, man. I think I'm making Brewing Network history, man.
Are you okay? Go right ahead.
I'm the first drunk brother to call in, man.
Yeah. You know, I am, baby. Are you serious? Are you a home brewer as well?
You're damn right.
Are you what?
No,
really?
No, doesn't he brew for the Monster?
What was that?
What's your question, Doc?
The monk?
No, man.
No, no, not but the other, not brother as in monastery, brother as in brother.
That's what I thought at first, but.
Yeah. Now I've seen your. I thought you were just making fun in the forum because you put the picture of the South Park kid in there.
Yeah.
Token.
Yeah, man. That's the story of my life.
Now listen. I am glad that you're calling in here. I was having this conversation with JP. Peter, hang on just a second. This is important. So if you're trying to call in, just give me a minute here. I was talking to JP about this. All right. I've been to a couple beer festivals. I've certainly been to a few beer meetings. And what is the deal? It's a bunch of white guys. It might as well be a Klan meeting at the half the time. And I've never seen an African-American home brewer. You're the first one that I'm talking to right now.
Hey, I'm making history, man.
You know what? I appreciate it. And you know what bums me out now is that you have to be our token guy. Like, you know,
hey, you know? That's me, man. I'm proud to be it, man.
You're proud to be it.
All the questions, dude.
That's what I'm going to do. I need you to stay tuned, because whenever I have a question, I can give you a call and you can enlighten us, you know?
That's me, man. All right.
Here's the reason I was also having the conversation is one of the guests we'd like to have, it's going to have to be a call-in. I guess the brewer at Brooklyn Brewery is also African-American.
Garrett Oliver.
And I was concerned if I was even allowed to have this conversation, because I don't want to isolate anybody and make anybody feel like the token guy either. So we were debating whether or not I was allowed to talk about it. But now I got it out of my system with you.
Hey, glad to help, man.
Yeah.
You got what I'm here for, man.
You got to send us some beer, too.
No problem.
All right, do it. How long you been listening?
Since around December, man.
All right.
Yeah, I've been brewing since December. I'm already on batch 11, man.
Nice. Oh. And are you in a beer club, too?
No, not yet.
Dude, don't do it. You're going to be the only black guy there.
Exactly.
Don't even bother.
Yep.
We're going to start our own club, you and me.
Hey, that's cool, man.
We're just gonna
the black guy and the gay guy.
Yeah. The two minorities in homebrewing. It's going to be me, you, and Garrett Oliver. We're the only three minorities in all of homebrewing.
All right, thanks, guys. Thanks
for the call.
Bye. All right.
That's awesome. Good sense of humor on that guy. Nice work. Peter, the phone line's free. I'm sorry about that. It was important.
You better be.
Important business, and you can call in now. Peter from Ailsmith should be calling.
And we'll wait till you call him. We won't say anything.
Yeah, we're just going to sit here in silence.
Bah.
Nah. I could do another little quick news thing about Australia, since we're always talking to those guys on the phone here. They're going to ban smoking in cars. Australia. What? Yeah, you're not allowed to smoke in your car anymore. Parliamentary inquiry will look at the effects of passive smoking on passengers, of course, particularly children. Supporters of the proposal have admitted, however, that enforcing such a ban would be difficult. Duh. Smokers in Australia have already been squeezed out of bars and restaurants, as well as some beaches and most other public places.
Beaches?
Beaches.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I can't go to the beach anymore?
And it says most of them.
Wow.
You don't want to go to the beach there anyway. I was watching National Geographic the other day.
Lots of sharks.
Not just the sharks, the dingoes. They're overrunning the beaches. They kill kids. And they killed a grown man.
The dingo ate my baby.
You ever notice that the most deadly anything is always in Australia?
It is.
Whether it be humans, animals,
snakes, spiders.
Yeah. It's very true. Australia has like 312 different kinds of animals and plants that kill you instantly.
No wonder why they drink so much. They're just happy to be alive.
Exactly. Every day is a day to be thankful. You know? So you don't want to go to the beach there and smoke anyway. Plus, I think dingoes are attracted to smoking.
Yeah, smoking will kill you. You don't want to do that.
Those dingoes really freak you out, though. You have not been talking about anything else but those dingoes for the past 2 days.
Because they look like, for one, they look like my dog, except for, like, longer hair. And they look real nice, is what I'm saying. You just want to pet them. And then they maul you. We talk about the pit bulls over here. Everyone's all worried about the pit bulls. My pit bull might as well be asleep half the time. You don't even notice she does anything. Lucky that she moves.
But that's true.
But the dingoes, they kill everything. They're ferocious. They everything in their path, they're like termites. You can't even walk across the street with a dingo there.
Wow, I'm not going to get you a dingo,
so
I believe.
So if we could get them to kill all the other poisonous and dangerous creatures over there, it'd be great.
Now you're left with a dingo. I guess Oz was telling me that actually domesticated dingoes are awesome.
They're great just, animals.
Because they're really smart.
Yeah, and they're very protective about you then. They're good. Yeah.
So is a skunk, but I don't want one of those either.
Oh, they're cute. Exactly. I like them.
And I wonder, you know, because I don't really believe in those pit bull stories either, where just like one day the pit bull turns on and kills somebody's baby. I don't believe that. I believe it's a process that's happened to that dog, and there's triggers long before that dog ever bites off anyone's face. And I'm wondering about the dingo in the same, you know, does the dingo like snap one day?
We should work for the Australian, like, tourist bureau.
Yeah, I think.
Like, how to sell people and wanting to go.
Yeah. Exactly.
So much for that sponsor.
Every week. You should make a sponsor list, Doc, and just notch one off every week.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I have two boards.
Yeah.
The go and the no-go board. Yeah. Move that one over.
Yeah. God, that no-go board is so big. It's amazing.
It's growing.
The plan of banning smoking in cars appears to have the support of the state government. A spokesman said that tough action should be implemented to stop the small number of irresponsible people who smoked around youngsters in their car. And this is, of course, the tricky issue of enforcement. Ministers have conceded that applying any ban would be difficult. Similar laws, however, have been proposed in parts of the United States and Germany, but it was rejected on privacy grounds. The New South Wales government said there would have to be far more public debate before any new measures were brought in.
Don't they have to toughen those kids up anyway?
Yeah, exactly. Over there, you got to get them ready. Blow smoke in their face and give them a beer.
Go walk the dingo.
You believe that, Danielle?
I can't take the dingo for a walk.
You got another app? Go walk the dingo in the spider forest right now.
And pick me up a snake and bring it home.
Oh, man. That's
that what you send your wife out to do?
All right. Well, I think Peter must be held up. Either that or just got tired of the busy line when we were taking care of business. So here's what we're going to do. Just take a real quick break because we got to get our Bigfoot tasting ready anyway. So Bigfoot is our tasting. Check it. Nice. I got a treat for you guys, or at least I think it's a treat. I've got a 2004, a 2005, and a 2006. So I think 2006 we'll do first. It'll be our official tasting because I'm pretty sure that's what most people were able to go and buy. My roommate just happens to love the stuff and keeps a six-pack of it all here. So we can then maybe just go through as we're, you know, we'll do it in the middle of the high-gravity discussion and see if we can talk about the differences in the ones that have been aged a year and then one aged 2 years.
Before we go on break, I got to say something. The chat room is going crazy about this. What is token thing that you just had with Paris. Yeah. I don't even know what token means, but okay.
Okay.
And remember that I still have the gift certificate from Friday that I won with by singing a song?
Yes.
They want me to donate it to him.
Oh.
And I think that's an excellent idea.
Good
for
idea.
Making history in the chat room and on the BN
It is
phone.
History.
So what was that again, the price?
It was $50 to Seven Bridges in Santa Cruz. And you can go to breworganic.com and check them out. They do all sorts of organic ingredients if you want to brew all organic. Daniela, that was an awesome thing for you to win because you're into the organic brewing
Absolutely.
Too. So very generous of you to give it away.
Yeah, it was the ideas of the guys in the chat room, and I think that's a very good idea.
All right.
I'm happy to do that.
Okay.
So, Terrence, I need your information. Please send it to johnp@thebrewingnetwork.com and to daniela@thebrewingnetwork.com, and you'll receive this gift certificate.
That's $50.
That's pretty sweet.
$50. It's got to be toward an ingredient kit there, but still, that's $50. It's a good amount.
I'll even throw in an extra copy of the shirt I gave you.
I don't think a brother can wear that shirt. I think that Taurus isn't going to want to wear that.
But that should go away for the Stump the Brewer today.
Okay, well, I'm fine with that. Let's give it to him, and then if he wants, we'll give him a copy of the gay shirt I got.
Awesome.
That's cool. All right, so here we go. Quick break, and maybe we'll get Peter to call in over the break. Maybe not. And we'll do our tasting right when we come back. It's Bigfoot, and you're listening to The Brewing Network.
The Brewing Network, saving your life.
One beer at a time.
Yes, sir. Welcome back. It's the High Gravity Beer Show, so let's start doing some high gravity stuff here. No Peter yet. Somebody call John and find out where Peter is. That's what we need to know.
Yo. Well, we'll just have to do the damn show without him.
Boob wanted to know if I was going to touch the Peter today. Funny boy. Laugh it up, funny boys. Our tasting today, since we're doing the High Gravity Show, and a good place to start our topic, is with Bigfoot from Sierra Nevada. So hopefully a few of you were able to go out and get that. It is their barley wine. They make it every year. Chris Graham and I were just talking at the break, which you may or may not have heard, as I occasionally leave microphones on in the studio.
And they do make it different every year, don't they? Tweak the recipe a little bit every year.
And that's what we were talking about. And, you know, Chris kind of saying that they'll even completely change the hops. And,
They don't just let the natural part of, being a natural hops and grain thing change the whole recipe, naturally from year to year. They actually go ahead and change it.
Okay. Now, and just mentioning that if you had made it the same, it would change year after year, and we'll get into this, too.
For a couple other reasons.
And it's a part of being a high-gravity, high-alcohol beer, too.
For one thing, because it's aged, it's going to be different from that. Mm. But just the year-to-year crop difference is going to make enough of a change in it. So it won't, and they don't try to keep it static that way. But it actually goes in and does change the ingredients.
Right. And then, of course, just the ability to age it because of the high gravity and the alcohol.
Right.
So that's kind of what I was getting at, too, is that, it's different than aging a 5% beer because it just doesn't do the same thing like a Bud, right? You don't go age in your Bud.
Why?
Although, if anybody ever bought me a six-pack of Bud, for example, it would age for years and years and years.
Don't lie.
No, because your roommates are probably drinking.
Yeah, you might be right. So what we have here is our Bigfoot 2006. We, by the way, are drinking it out of goblets, snifters, whatever you want to call them, and that way we can get a little more aroma. And because it's a barley wine, typically you want to drink it out of a glass like this anyway, just to, kind of get more out of it. It's probably a little on the cold side, ours is. What do you guys think? Is that an all right temperature?
I think it's all right.
Okay.
It warms up in the mouth.
Exactly. Anybody know what the percent is on a Bigfoot in general?
It should tell you right there.
It smells great.
So 9.6 by volume.
So it's got a lot of hops still.
And what is it, barley wine style, or what did you say?
Yeah,
it's American barley wine.
Okay, so because to me it doesn't taste like barley wine at all.
Mm. Well, American barley wine, too.
Yeah.
It gets it from high alcohol like a wine would be, but it's made from barley.
Mm-hmm.
So first off, just from not even having tasted it yet, but just the smell. For one, it does have a hint of that proprietary Sierra Nevada smell. That you even get out of a regular Sierra Nevada. But you can really smell the phenols coming off of it as well, right off the bat.
Yeah, the higher alcohols, you can smell that.
So and that little nasal clearing that you got going on, mm-hmm. that's the phenols going in your nose there.
And you can actually smell the crystal malt.
I'm going to guess that they're starting to put Amarillo in this.
Yes.
Think so, huh?
Which I don't think they did in the past. Maybe last year, but not the year before that.
And which scent is it? You know, is it a citrusy thing that you're getting? What is it that you're saying? Amarillo.
Piney citrus. Amarillo is just that little bit different from Cascade and Centennial, which has always been the historical major hop of Bigfoot.
Okay, gotcha. All right, so that's your aroma right there, unless there's anything else you get there.
It smells a lot like pineapple and a piney resiny kind of smell.
Yeah.
And I do smell the crystal. It's a lot of malt coming through.
What smell is that? Is it a sweet?
It's a sweet, caramely kind of smell.
Okay. All right. All right, let's give her a taste, huh? This is the 2006 we're having here, by the way.
It's a lot of everything.
Huge mouthfeel.
Yep. A lot of malt right up front.
It is a lot of everything.
But, you know, first thing you catch is that it's so sweet and so, just mouthfeel is so thick. But then the hops take over right away and just kill it. So it's not too much one way or the other.
Yeah.
So it just balances. Not right at first, but about halfway through, the balance will take over.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call it balanced. The bitterness really does take over. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of tilting to one side more than the other. That malt flavor really kind of.
And the finish, it's all hops and all bitter.
Yeah, the bitterness lingers quite a bit. So you just got to drink again, get the sweet.
Yeah.
and try to stop a vicious cycle.
Where on your tongue is the flavor happening, both in the beginning, in the nose, and then afterward?
It's all over the board.
I get the hot alcohol part and that's all over the tongue. It's just kind of just takes that all over the tongue, but the hops is right in the middle.
Yeah,
and
that bitterness is right in the middle.
Right,
that's where I was getting almost toward. It almost feels like it's toward the back, and I think it's maybe the malt creeping, kind of back and forth. But it is. You get a real middle to back on that bitterness, and it really sticks there.
Yeah,
that aftertaste stays there for a long time after you take that drink. It's just kind of hanging out right in the middle of your palate. This beer,
it's got a lot of bitterness that just hangs. I'd like to see what the other two are going to be like, because that will age out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The phenols are, to me, a lot more in the aroma of it, in the smell, than they are in the mouthfeel. And maybe that's because of the bitterness. I know that in a lot of high-gravity beers, a good thing about phenols is that it will actually kind of cut it for you, make it not as thick and not as strong. And in this beer, the bitterness.
You're talking about the fusel alcohols?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Am I totally wrong with the fusel alcohols? I'm sorry. I keep using the wrong word then, don't I?
Yeah. I'm going to stop you right now.
Thank you. Appreciate it. You should have done it a long time ago. Yeah, the fusel alcohols. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
The word you keep using. I do not think it means what you think it means.
Perfect. Yeah, do that a lot earlier next time. Thanks, Doc. But you know what I mean? It doesn't cut it so much on this one. You end up with just still a lot of a bitterness and not so much of the fusel alcohol flavor, I don't think.
Well, that'll bring in a lot of sweetness, too, is the higher alcohol. Alcohol's got a sweet character to it.
It's almost hard when you're drinking a beer this young. I mean, this is a huge beer. And
sure.
It's really young. Everything's so green on it.
Right. Okay, well, why don't we start our discussion on high-gravity beers. We'll finish these off, and then we'll try one from a year ago and start talking about the difference there. Because definitely one of the things you want to do with high-gravity beers is age them, absolutely.
Okay. I guess we could start with kind of the big things you got to think about. It's got to be big wort, big hops, big yeast, and big time.
It's a big-ass beer.
It does take a lot to get everything out of that one. To get it, so let's start with the big wort. Extract brewers, you probably got the easier time of it. You got to add more extract, especially with the barley wine. It's going to be all malt.
And this is the point. If you're an extract brewer, it's the point that you need to step it up if you haven't done so. You're not going to do a partial boil with extra with, you know, of a barley wine. If you're doing, Doc's got here on his notes, you know, I've seen 12 to 14 pounds usually for a barley wine extract.
Yeah.
And if you only have 3 gallons of water, that means your whole thing is malt extract. You're boiling on the stove.
Yeah, you're going to be doing maple syrup there.
Well, that's a great point. So you got to be doing a full
yeah,
boil.
Yeah, okay. You got to have a 7 gallon or larger kettle.
So what Doc has here and that Chris just mentioned, and just kind of an outline of where to begin, if you are doing extract and it's going to be a full boil, Doc's written down here 14 pounds of liquid malt extract to get you a 1-1 gravity, a 1.1 gravity on that thing. That's a lot of extract.
That's a lot. And if you're used to putting in 6 pounds, yeah, that's what's going to take. The harder thing is when you're doing all grains to get that out of there. It's tough to efficiently get out of your grains above a 160. And as homebrewers, we don't really care so much. We just throw more in there. Some ways around that is to do extract to boost it. So you do your all-grain regular mash, sparge it in there, and then put more extract in there. Another way is pretty popular is to boil it down because you're going to start. You need to get the thing more concentrated. So as you boil it down, boil off the water, your gravity points are going to go up.
And this is where software is going to be your best friend. And this is what Justin needs to learn based off of what he was telling us about his beer earlier.
Yeah.
You got to start knowing what your pre-boil needs to be. And so that way you can figure out what your gravity is going to be after the boil based off of the pre-boil.
So now when you're talking about my pre-boil, you're saying I've done my mash, mm-hmm. I've added my extract as well. And now before I ever really get it boiling, I'm going to take a gravity reading.
Exactly. Especially, let's just say, in this scenario where you're going for, I'm sure Doc does this when he's doing big beers and he needs to do some supplementing of extract. You mash and you get what you can get. But then you know the number you need that gravity to be before you boil it. And that, you know, your gravity is going to go up as you boil because you're driving off water. And so that way you can adjust for it before you even start boiling. So
I don't want to hear you cry that you didn't get 5 gallons of beer.
Damn it.
Yeah, because you do.
Yeah.
And you're going to all this trouble, you want to get 5 gallons of beer. So if you start with 5 gallons and you boil for an hour, you're not going to end up with 5 gallons of beer.
Gotcha.
So your brewing software really helps you do that.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Well, not only the volume, but the gravity. That's the key part. And then you can calculate how much extract you need to get up to that 1.1 or 1.8 or whatever you want gravity-wise.
I've always said it's more important to hit the gravity than the volume.
But
you can figure this all in ahead of time so you know exactly where you're starting. And by boiling it off, you're going to end up at your gravity points, at your volume when you're done.
And the best way to do that is with a program.
Usually, yeah. ProMash makes it. So it's got a button called pre-boil.
Yeah, I saw that.
So you can.
I didn't use it, but I saw it.
You can do it by hand. You can do it a couple of ways. One of the main things is most people's mash tons aren't big enough to hold that much grain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think mine's
not. So the easiest way and the shortest thing is to add extract to boost or to boil it down and, you know, get less.
Okay.
There's a couple other ways to do it. You can do a party guile type of brewing, mashing.
Sorry, let me interrupt you just real quick. You there, Jamil?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, cool. I just want to get him on the line here, and he can just kind of do the whole thing with us, too. Jamil wrote an article on high-gravity beers.
Cool.
It was in Zymergy a couple of months back. What issue was it, Jamil?
Oh, I'm not sure. It was,
come on, it's on the wall.
3 or 4 issues ago.
Okay.
And I had a recipe in there from Alesmith on their horny devil ale.
Gotcha. Okay. So. Do you got time to kind of hang out and do the whole thing with us, or you want to talk?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So we'll go ahead and go on, Doc, and then we'll talk.
Well, I just started with party guile style mashing, where you just take the first runnings, and those are going to have the most gravity points in them. Probably the first third's going to have half your gravity points in it. So you can do it that way. Another way to do it, I know Mike McDowell does it this way, is do a double mash. You take the runnings off the first mash, run it all down. Instead of boiling that one, you use that as your strike water.
Oh, really?
So you make a whole new mash. And
no kidding.
You use that, put all that right back into the mash.
Yeah.
And then drain all that off.
Now, so if you do that, you got to heat it up to your regular strike temp, again?
Right.
And then you just pour it all right back.
Use that as your strike water.
Yeah.
So you have a dry mash bed.
Yeah.
The second time.
Yep.
And you throw the first runnings off the wort, the first mash, put it back in there, and you use that.
Wow, that's a pretty nice trick, actually.
And if you got a smaller mash tun, that's one of the cool ways to do it.
Okay.
Another way to get the gravity up is to add sugar. That's mostly what the Belgians do. It will lighten the body. It gets it so it's a little bit more drinkable instead of like a barley wine.
Okay.
You'll get the gravity, final gravity on down due to that.
Now, speaking of gravities then, what is a good starting gravity? What are we looking at? What's the range here?
Let's just say over 1080, wouldn't you say?
1080, 1090 probably for big 1080, 1090. And then they'll go up to, 1120.
I mean, I know you start your wheat beers right around 1085.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, you've been over to my house drinking those.
Jamil, you know what BJCP says about it?
Well, anything over... 1070 and up is considered a big beer.
Okay.
But, we're in the range of high gravity, so we're not just talking big beers, we're talking, really big beers.
Extreme.
So, I'd say, 1090 plus is getting into the really big beers.
Okay. And then, again, to get your gravity, and I might be jumping the gun here, but a question from the chat room is about adding the extract. Can you do, we've been talking a lot about the late addition of extract in extract brewing. Can you do the same thing then with a big beer?
Absolutely.
You can.
It doesn't really matter, but it'll help with your hops, your hop utilization to add it late.
Okay. Especially if you're brewing and doing a partial boil. One of the problems with a partial boil is that you can only put 100 IBUs into a liquid. And if you're doing a partial boil, and let's say you're boiling half the volume, you can only get 50 IBUs in there.
Gotcha. You'll get 100 the first time, but as soon as you dilute it back up, then it knocks that 100 down to 50.
So that's one of the issues against that. Also, you're going to get a lot of caramelization. And one of the things to worry about on big beers is ending up with too many unfermentable sugars. So your specialty grains, your kettle caramelization, and if you go do all grain in a big, really big beer, you're going to end up with a really sweet beer at the end. So a lot of times you want to add simple sugar, like cane sugar or corn sugar.
Yeah,
it'll help dry it out and get your finishing gravity down.
Hey Jamil, so they can start searching. Where can they find your article?
It's in Zymergy. It's a couple issues back. I'm not really sure.
Okay. Check the
called Big Beers, Small Sugars.
Did you name that yourself?
Yes.
It's a good name.
I see a T-shirt coming.
I'm gonna be pulling this out of the arcade.
If you look on Beer Town, you might be able to find it.
Sorry, I just couldn't remember the website.
Look here, I happen to have the issue here. It's volume 28, number 6, the November-December 2005 issue. Yeah.
I thought it was hanging on your wall.
Yeah, honey, can you put this back on the wall? I read it.
Look at that. It opened right to the page. It's on page.
Look at that.
Now, give the issue again, because I know you can go to beertown.org and actually order issues. What issue is it again, please?
It's the November-December 2005 issue. Okay. So, volume 28, number 6.
There you go. So check it out. Beertown.org, and you can order by issue there.
And the whole issue is about making extreme beers, big beers. So big hopping, beyond barley wine. It's a good issue.
Okay.
A lot of stuff in there.
All right. You want to keep going as far as gravity is concerned and ingredients? I had a question come through already about the yeast starter.
We'll get to that one.
All right. Go ahead.
Well, and if you're doing a... all grain. Yeah. You got to get your mash temps down too.
What temps are we talking?
In the mid 40s, probably.
Yeah, it depends if you're going to go all grain, then yeah, like Doc's saying, get down into the, in the mid 40s, upper 40s, 140s, and hold it there for a long, long time.
Now, is that because if lower temperatures pull out more of the fermentables?
No, it changes the fermentables, so it's more fermentable. It
breaks it up into smaller sugars.
Oh, okay.
So the yeast can eat it down more, and you're going to get your finishing gravity lower without it being too thick of a beer.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're not going to do that, or if you're doing extract, you're going to want to add some plain table sugar or some corn sugar. And you can add, a good percentage. Like Alesmith, they add like 11% simple sugar to their beer.
Wow. Okay.
And, even with table sugar, in a big beer, you're not going to taste
10% table sugar.
No,
you're not going to get any cidery or anything like
that. It'll ferment out pretty clean and lighten up the whole body, so it's not just laying on your tongue.
Gotcha.
Right, there's no flavor to table sugar once it ferments.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough. You know, already I'm going to say it sounds to me like you really are going to have to use a program to calculate these things out. Because if you're adding just, different types of the fermentables like that, how are you going to calculate
Well, a lot of it's the don't do this, do this kind of thing so you can avoid the pitfalls at the end.
Yeah.
And one of the pitfalls that Jamil was saying is you don't want a cloyingly sweet, overly thick beer.
Okay.
And this is one of the ways to do it.
Okay. Gotcha. All right, so low temps on the mash then. Definitely we got that. All right, go ahead, Doc.
Okay, well, let's move on to hops then. Big hops is going to be needed for this. You're going to have a lot of malt that you're going to have to balance out. The thing you got to remember that when the gravity goes up, the hop utilization is going to go down. And so let's just point it out, in a 90-minute boil at 1040, you're going to get about 35% utilization. 1090, you're going to get about 27%. And at 1110, you're going to get 22%.
So just the higher the gravity, the less.
Yeah, you're not going to get as much of the isoacids to dissolve into the solution.
Okay.
And as Jamil was saying, that you're only going to get so much in there because of how thick the wort is.
Okay.
So you're not going to get the utilization, but you got to get it in there. Otherwise, you're going to have another thick, cloyingly sweet beer.
Gotcha.
You're also going to need to increase the hop rate because of the long aging. You're going to lose a lot of bitterness if it's going to age a year or two.
Yeah.
Standard thoughts on that are you're going to lose about a quarter of the total IBUs per year. And same kind of goes true for the aroma hops, too.
Okay.
So as Chris was saying, this being a very young beer, a lot of this, the hop bitterness and the hop aroma is right in your face.
Yeah.
And it hasn't had a chance to mellow down yet. And you're overcompensating on this because you want to have it up front in a young beer. As it starts to age out, you're going to end up losing a lot of it.
Okay.
So if you want to drink this beer in 2 years, you got to put more in there at the beginning. So it's going to be a green beer for the first year.
Gotcha.
It's going to mellow down. A lot of things are going to mellow out, and it'll all come together in a year, two, three.
Now, it's really interesting that you're pointing out, especially the green beer flavor of it. When I went to the Barley Wine Festival, and some of the barley wines I was tasting there out of the Toronado were very young, and it was really easy to compare the barley wines not to a barley wine, but to an Imperial IPA, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. They were still high-gravity beers. They still put a lot of malt in there, but the hop was strong enough, and the bitterness was strong enough, and even green enough in some of them that some people said, well, this isn't a barley wine at all. It's obviously an Imperial IPA, but maybe 2 years from now,
it'll be more like a barley wine.
It's more like a barley wine.
Well,
so.
I think, as the Imperial IPAs become more and more in fashion, or as some people say, falling out of fashion again, who knows where that's going, but...
Yeah.
I mean, there's a blurred line now. I mean, you take barley wine, or you take a Sierra Nevada Bigfoot, and that to me is way too close to a Imperial IPA.
Okay.
To say there's a total separation of the two.
Okay.
Jamil, what do you think about that?
Well, one thing Andy at Dogfish Head, he stresses going with low cohumulone hops in a barley wine because you want a smoother bitterness. You don't want as harsh a bitterness, and maybe the double IPAs go with that. I think there's a differentiation between the two. One of the things about a barley wine or a really big beer is you want it to sit for a couple of years because you want those alcohols and those esters and a little bit of oxygen. You want all that to kind of merge and marry and work their magic on each other. And the change is tremendous, and you get a really enjoyable beer out of it. If you drink it early and young, it's going to seem kind of harsh
and
quite
big
balanced.
Okay.
But Doc's saying you're losing 25% a year in your hops. You make that adjustment up front, and then you got to wait a couple of years. And one of the things I always believe in is make the biggest batch you can of your high gravity beers.
Yeah.
Because you want them to last for 3 or 4 years. You
gotcha.
Want to have a bottle every month and enjoy it over the cross time. You know, so make as big a batch as you can.
Yeah. I like how Jamil just turned into techno Jamil.
Yeah, Jamil is like a techno man. Yeah,
it's like you just got a little, their voice just got a little computerized at the end there.
Robo Jamil. Brewer.
It's funny. Super Jamil. What are a couple of examples of the low cohumulone hops, Jamil?
Magnum.
Yeah, Magnum, Horizon.
Is Target low cohumulone? I've never used Target, so yeah. I don't know.
Hmm. Okay.
Can I ask you guys a question about the hops? Somebody from the chat room wants to know what you guys have to say about using hop extracts to raise the IBUs of an under-hopped barley wine. How much are they supposed to use?
Hmm.
It depends on the extract and
what they dilute it to before they add it.
Well, can you build an example for me?
No.
Thank you, Jamil.
So by under-hopped, are they asking, like, the beer's all done and now they want to add something to it, or it's, you know...
The way they do it is, you know, like Chris is saying, dilute it down first, and you can dilute it in beer.
Okay. Right?
You know, take one bottle of your beer, pour some out, you know, dilute it down, take, you know, one dropper full and put it in there, and then you have to, you know, do a titration, and you have to figure your... ratio. So you're going to add one drop to a bottle and that seems right to you, or two drops seems right, or three drops, then you can carry that out to, you know, a keg or all the bottles or however you're doing it. If you've got a keg, pour yourself a measured amount, 2 ounces, and add a certain amount of extract and see if that's correct. And if it is, then multiply up and add that to the keg. Actually add like 10% less. Try it. Or maybe even a quarter less. Try it in the keg after a couple of days, and then add a little bit more if it needs more, and just kind of work your way up. Because once you go past it, it's tough to go back.
I wouldn't suggest opening bottles to put it in either.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
Even if you had, you know, real good technique in doing that, it's probably not a good idea to go ahead and open bottles to do it.
Brew a new batch.
Yeah, or just, you know, mix yourself up one bottle with some IBUs and strong IBUs, and then pour a little bit in each glass each time you have some.
Okay.
You know, or, you know, work it out where you know it's one drop per bottle.
Yeah, put a drop in the glass.
Bottom of your glass, and then pour your beer in it.
Pour the beer on it. You got to titrate it out, because we don't know how much under-hopped it is. You're just saying it's under-hopped, so it's kind of tough. Titrating it out is the best thing. Take a known volume that you got, your 12-ounce beer or something, and try two drops.
Well, actually, the extracts that they have are probably too strong to put a full drop into 12 ounces and want
to
drink that.
So that's why you have to
dilute that down.
Yeah, dilute that down first.
They take that stock solution and add that to beer.
And by one drop, you're talking an actual, like, eyedropper drop.
Smaller than an eyedropper.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. And it's just too much in there, huh?
If you were to drink a 12-ounce beer with that, so much in your mouth that you won't taste anything else for the night.
Wow. I think that's the beer I just brewed, actually.
won't we? Why don't we just boil it down and make extract?
Yeah, that's what we might want to do. That's amazing. That's really potent stuff, then.
Yeah.
Where can you get these extracts already done?
We've been buying some and experimenting with them, talking to Hop Union about seeing if we can figure out an easy way to cut it for people already.
Oh, okay.
That's the hard thing. You buy this one little vial, and it's like $150 for this little tiny vial.
Wow.
Homebrewers aren't going to want to buy that.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to figure out how to cut it and then make that real simple where it's just an eyedropper in a beer.
Sure. No, it's a good idea, especially because even that little vial is going to sit around their entire life.
Yeah. I don't know how stable it is either. I think it's pretty stable, actually.
Okay. Yeah, you might just brew, you know, especially if you have it in a keg, brew yourself another beer that's really, really hoppy to the limits, and then, you know, blend the two together.
Yep. Cut it with that.
Yeah, buy a keg of Pliny and just have it next to it.
There you go.
It's a lot like cutting your crack, eh, Jamil?
Exactly.
As long as you got the right scale, baby.
That's right.
The right scale, right razor blades.
You only want to do it with the good
stuff,
too. A
little talc, yeah.
Uh-huh. All right, so, Doc, did you mention this, too? I'm reading off of your list here, that not only do you have to increase the hops for these reasons we're talking about, but when you do that, you're talking about wort absorption now, too.
Right. You're going to be putting a lot more hops in there. And I've had a couple of questions on the forums. The same thing is, where's all my wort going?
Yeah.
By the time they drain it all off and leave the tube or the hop tube in the bottom, it ends up being they'd only get 4 gallons out of there, because it does suck up a lot of it. You're going to be putting so much hops in here, you're going to lose even more of your final wort volume. Okay. So you need to really think about that ahead of time. Brew another extra gallon, possibly, or whatever. You got to figure it out what it is for your system. So you got to increase the wort volume. Another way to do it is use high alpha hops. That way there's less hop material in there to soak it up, and you're still getting the same alpha acid IBUs in out of it.
Good idea.
Just what, some things to think about.
What about, and I'm not a proponent of this, the reading I've done says that hop bags are not the best thing to use, especially when you want to get more hop utilization, you want the hop churning. But is hop bagging a way to go to reduce that? Because now all your hop matter is going to be within the mesh bags?
It'll help to some point, but you're still going to have a lot in there. It still soaks it up, and you still, and you don't really want to squeeze the bags when you're done.
Yeah, I've done that, actually, but I see why you don't want
to
do that.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, okay.
But get yourself a really high alpha acid bittering hop to use as your base. So use Magnum or Horizon or one of those, you know, 13-14% bittering hops.
So you could use you know, half or one third of what you would for a low alpha hop on that one. So there's less vegetable matter in there that are gonna soak up all your wort.
Okay. Good idea.
And use pellets.
Pellets, yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, all the leafy stuff really will suck it up, too.
Okay, so you definitely want to
most people, especially all the brewers we've had in here, and they say most brewers are going to pellets now anyway.
Oh, okay.
Almost all of them use that. I know I've seen the big bales over at Anchor Steam. Big room full of bales and bales of hops.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I think they're probably one of the few that still do it.
Yeah. Even you know, Dave, who was in here from Magnolia a couple weeks back, likes to really do the traditional style, but he only will dry hop with the flowers in his cask ales because that's a traditional way. But he, as much as he wants to be traditional, he uses the pellets as well. And I think you'd probably find the same in German breweries, and just the efficiency is unbelievable.
Plus the storage issues. You can get more hops per area. That's also going to be a little fresher.
Exactly.
Because it is pelletized.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I mean, when we get in 41-pound bales and we open them up, and you get a German Hallertauer in whole and you get it in pellets, and the pellets are bright green. They smell great.
Yeah.
You open up the whole hops, and it's a little bit cheesy, musty, pale yellow.
All right. Now, in bringing this up, Chris, I wanted to ask you, too, since we're just on the topic. I've heard people say, you know, when I go to a homebrew shop and buy my hops, I'm buying hops that they're already a year old when I get them from you. Is that the general rule?
Well, we're shysters.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, here's the deal. I mean, business people are business people. I don't care if it's my shop or other shops.
Sure.
And then Hop Union and other hop growers, they're businesses too. They don't hit a new season and go, oh, yeah, guys, throw away all the old stuff and make room. Now, they do measure it every year, and they actually measure it between that, too, to tell you what the alpha acid is as it periodically goes down.
Okay.
And I'd say pellet hops move way faster than whole now, so you're probably getting fresher when you're going pellets.
But even still, whether it's that recent or not, it's another benefit of the pellet hops with how
storage.
Well that they store.
Yeah.
It doesn't so much matter that we're buying last year's crop.
And make sure whoever is selling them to you isn't doing them in, like, clear Ziploc bags.
Right.
I mean, I don't care about the clear. UV light does a little damage, but oxygen is the number one damaging part of hops.
So vacuum pack all the way.
Or nitrogen flush, either way. But you want it in a bag that's going to stop oxygen from going through.
Gotcha. All right. Now, at B3, do you guys actually bag? You get a big bundle of hops and you bag them yourselves? Or they send you the pre-packed bags?
We get about a pallet of hops a month, and we get them in the 41-pound bales and break them down to the kit size, so anywhere from 0.5 to 1 pound.
Gotcha.
And you put in them nitrogen flush.
Well,
yeah, every one of those little bags is nitrogen flush. I've seen the guys doing it.
Yeah, that's
what we tell you.
Yeah. Unless we
they're actually injecting oxygen.
Yeah. Well, no, we do take pride in that, Jamil's seen it. I'm sure Doc's come by and seen it. And they have a wand to a D-tank, which is a tank about the height of John Plisse.
Yeah.
And about as skinny.
My wand is about the height of John Plisse, too.
And, they flush each one individually before sealing them up.
Okay.
And you guys go through the hops so fast that you're churning over hops coming from the storage at the hop grower that's
You know, that's about as fresh as you're going to get hops. You can't get hops any fresher
okay.
than what you're getting from Warbeer.
Unless you
that's
pick them
that's
yourself.
My personal thing, yeah. And even then, you're not going to store them as well as the distributor does.
Right.
And so, and they only pick hops once a year. So you want a high volume vendor that's going to really crank through the hops. You don't want stale cheesy hops sitting on the shelf.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that we got grow your own cousin. Maybe there's some people growing their own hops.
Growing
out
their
there.
Own hops. That's right. Well, the other thing is if you want to realize how lucky we are in the States in general, listen to the Graham Sanders, the Australian show that we play here on Tuesday mornings, and he just did a discussion on his last episode about. Or maybe the last two episodes, about how difficult it is to get fresh hops there in Australia. It's difficult to get ingredients in general, but fresh hops in particular. And so he circumvented the homebrew shops and ordered like a pallet of hops himself, got a bunch of people together and did that, and really pissed off the homebrew shops because they're like, what are you doing? How are we going to move this stuff now? And his whole deal was, you know what? If you ordered fresh stuff, you wouldn't have to worry about it now, would you? Because I'd buy it from you. You know, so just a kind of a heads up of how lucky, no matter where you're buying it from in the States, you're getting pretty good stuff.
Yeah, White Labs has the same problem over there.
Oh, getting fresh yeast there?
Yeah, I mean, they're sending yeast fresh from here, but the distributors aren't moving it fast enough. So I've been told by a lot of homebrewers who buy it directly from us and pay for the air shipment, which is unbelievable to me.
Yeah.
Just because they're like, it's not worth trying to buy here.
I had a question come through. I don't know. You don't do this at B3. Maybe you guys know the answer. They want to know how you compress the pellets, but you guys don't actually do. You get the pellets and then bag them.
I'm actually going to see Ralph next month at Hop Union, so I'll try to get a tour. But I believe okay. they go through a grinding process.
Okay.
And then that goes into a compression bed where they flush with nitrogen, and then they push it through the extruder.
Gotcha.
That's a good guess, at least.
It sounds good to me. It could be wrong, and I'm thinking, wow.
Ding, 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 ding.
Perfect.
20 points for
Yeah, if you can get a tour, I'd love a report if you can come back
Absolutely.
And do that. That'd be great. Okay. And then last question on hops, and then we can probably move on. About freezing the hops, does it make them last extra time? And I think that's opposed to us putting them in the refrigerator. Right,
freezing's gonna
freeze
help.
Them.
Yeah, freezing's gonna help. I mean, it's minor, but it's still the difference of how much scavengeable oxygen's available.
Okay. So, but what about now? What are we talking time difference wise here? If I put them in the fridge for a year and in the freezer for a year, big difference?
Well, there's a big difference in the temperature. Temperature is the prime difference in how hops store. So there's temperature, there's oxygen, there's moisture. Mm-hmm. Those are the three things you need to worry about.
Okay.
And the most important is temperature. If you get it cold enough, you get it to absolute zero, they don't oxidize. It's impossible, right?
Absolute zero?
You know, if you... Exactly. If
negative 273?
Here at my house.
Yeah. Okay.
It's right next to the clean room. if you can get it down to, freezer temperature in the 20s or below,
okay.
They're fairly stable, and you don't have to worry so much about oxygen, and especially on pellets, because they've got that slick outer finish on them where they've gone through the hammer mill and extruder.
Okay.
So
if you're in Canada, just keep them on your porch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the colder you can keep them, the longer they're going to last, and that's the critical factor right there. I've seen studies on temperature, time, oxygen, and moisture, and temperature's it.
Okay. Are you? What are you doing over there, Doc?
I lean
doing something under the desk.
No, I lean on the desk over here, and whoever built this piece of shit.
Right,
listen.
Yes, so? You build it better, dude.
I wouldn't. Yeah, I would. You've seen
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
Don't invite him to do that.
Keep taunting him. I'd love him to build a new desk. Great. All right, so why don't we move on from hops then to our next item on the list there.
Okay, we're going to go back to big yeast. Big everything here. Main thing is alcohol tolerance. You're going to need to basically deal with that, so... Belgian strains. I even read that Cal Ale works pretty well on that one. Of course, you're going to need a large starter, Jamil.
Oh, yeah. And all the yeasts will do, 12, 14%. But what happens is when the alcohol gets to 5%, 5% alcohol is toxic to yeast, and they pretty much shut down at around 5%. So... what allows them to ferment more to a higher level of alcohol is the fact that they can carry the alcohol back outside the cell wall. And so the cell wall needs to be nice and elastic and ready to go. So if they've had to bud too many times and they get a lot of scarring, or they didn't get enough oxygen to make the sterols, to make the cell wall nice and pliable,
permeable.
Then you're gonna end up with a lot of problems. So you gotta have plenty of yeast to start with. You gotta have healthy yeast, and you got to give it plenty of O2 in order to for them to build a nice permeable cell wall.
Jamil, do you ever do dosing of oxygen more than once?
I know they talk about, especially Clayton Clone was talking about being able to add oxygen up to 12 hours, but I never have. I always just build a big enough starter or big enough. I repitch yeast for the big beers. I calculate out exactly how many cells I need and make sure my yeast is real healthy from the previous batch, and I've had no problem.
Let's talk about that for a second. If you're going to repitch from a previous batch, you really don't want to use something that's already been in a high alcohol environment. Most of the yeasts are going to be overstressed, and they're not going to be so healthy that they can take on another big beer. So if you're going to rack onto something that you've done already, something with a lower gravity would probably be your best bet.
Okay.
Are you using a lot of servo? Using a lot of servo?
Anything I can help them with.
Servomyces is what Graham's talking about, too, which is a yeast nutrient that you put right in your starter malt, right? Is that the place that you put the servo
Most
in?
Most people do it in the boil. Last 10 minutes, 20 minutes of the boil.
Of your actual brew.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. But there's also then, what's the nutrient you put in your starter as well?
Diammonium phosphate. So okay. There's a lot of different ones you can help add to
it. Or
you
can use servo or...
Okay.
Yeah. You can use servo.
I think I used servo last time.
You can also use multiple strains. You can start with like a Cal Ale, get it down somewhat far, and you can pitch with a champagne yeast if you want at the end. You wouldn't want to do a champagne yeast at the beginning. It'll just dry it out to just a bland nothingness.
Okay.
It's kind of a sour, kind of nasty thing.
Yeah, I'm anti-champagne yeast.
Well.
Like overall?
Unless you're making champagne.
Good point.
I've used it to dry out some things. Most of your esters and things are going to come through from the beginning.
Jamil's anti-French.
Yeah.
Well, I guess. Well. Three-wheel Peugeot. yeah. No, I think, and maybe it's just me. You know, if I don't do it right to start with the ale yeast or. Or the lager yeast will actually handle high gravity quite well.
Well, I'm not talking about trying to salvage it either.
Then I'll just throw it out.
I'm not talking about, you know, we didn't make it all the way down and then throwing it in there. I'm talking about
planning it that way.
He's planning on failure. Don't worry about it. He's used to that.
No, I'm planning on getting it down to maybe 75% done. And then throwing in the champagne yeast just to try to dry it out a little bit more.
Now that's how you would normally do it?
If I was going to do that regimen.
Okay.
I would probably go with what Jamil does and have a nice healthy yeast pitch of one kind of ale, possibly a lager.
Okay.
And go with that.
And Jamil, you're saying big no on the planet that way?
He just said he doesn't.
I don't like it. I'm against it. But you know, Doc makes great beer, and
absolutely,
you know, he's got his way of doing it too.
I like to
there's multiple ways.
I like to try new things and try different ways. They don't always work for me.
Yeah, that always gets you in trouble, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Well, and that brings
a lot of different levels.
Well, and that brings us back to the, you know, if you're brewing with all grain, low mash temperature, not a lot of specialty grains. If you're brewing with extract, you need a fermentable extract. You use something like the Breese gold extract is, highly fermentable. The Alexander's ultralight, the ultralight that Moore Beer and Northern Brewer sells, highly fermentable. Don't use something like Laglander, which is very low fermentability.
Okay.
So if you get you can do a test on your own, or if you get Ray Daniels Designing Great Beers, he explains how to test for fermentability on your extracts.
Oh, nice.
Could an unknown kind.
Could you put that on Mr. Malty, maybe, the different fermentabilities, or at least the high to low of the extracts?
The two most fermentable are the Brees and the Alexanders.
Even over Cooper's?
That's what I was told. And then Cooper's is just like a point or two less. So it's like right Brees, Alexanders, and Cooper's is just a little bit less.
Okay.
But I may be wrong, but that's what I came across when I was doing research for the article.
Oh, okay. All right.
And Bob says, Bob Hansen says, the Brees Pills and Light Extract or the Alexanders.
Okay.
All right, and he speaks highly of everybody, so.
We got to take a quick break. You want to hang in there, Jamil?
Sure, I can.
Okay, hang in a sec, and we're going to take just a real quick break. When we come back, we'll get into the next stage, which is going to be your fermentation and whatnot. And then after that, we're going to talk about whether you're going to keg it or bottle it and bottle conditioning and all sorts of things like that, how you're going to prime and all the good stuff to finish up the high-gravity discussion. So Jamil Zainashef on the phone helping us out. I appreciate that, as our guest didn't make the call in. And Jamil's got this in his Zymergy article, too, all about high-gravity beers, which is the November-December issue. Of course, Chris Graham hanging out with us, helping out, too, from Beer, Beer, and More Beer. And the great Dr. Scott giving all the good stuff right here on the Brewing Network. We'll be right back.
Now back to the Brewcaster.
The Brewcaster
on the Brewing Network.
It's a high gravity show. Talking all about good high gravity beers and how to brew them and the whole process. Jamil Zainashef on the line with us helping out, and Dr. Scott and Chris Graham doing the same thing. You still there, Jamil?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, cool. Got everything working well, and that's awesome. Our first no-show this week we've had, and it's a two historic momentous things happened on today's show.
It's a shame. Peter's a really great guy. Smith is some fantastic beer, and he's a home brewer, from way back, and that's where he came from, and he really does a lot for the homebrew community, so it's a shame that we didn't get a chance to chat with him tonight.
I think that something either came up and he couldn't call in, or he tried to call in and it was busy and he just said, "Hey, floofa all you guys."
Yeah, that could have been it. He floofed us. Yeah, that's highly possible. Busy man, I ain't dealing with busy signals.
Floofa.
Yeah, we'll contact him and try to get him back because I've heard nothing but good things. Really like their website, by the way, and that's available on our main page. So we'll see what happened and we'll make fun of him for it next time he calls in too and have a good time with the whole deal. All right, so the next part of the process, although we are tasting another one of these Bigfoots here. What do we got? The 2005 here, Doc?
I think that's what I opened.
Is that what you opened here? Let's just do a real quick and maybe mention the differences, and then we'll go on to the next part of the brew process.
As soon as you smell it, it's just totally different.
You can smell it from a mile away, too. It smells a lot better.
Yes, you don't have the hops hitting you right in the face.
Yeah, it smells a lot more malty, like a barley wine.
Yes.
Exactly.
Which is exactly what you guys were talking about those hops mellowing out over time. It's night and day. It's not even the same beer.
It doesn't smell green.
Yeah.
It's a different beer.
Yeah, you got quite a bit of alcohol still coming through, a lot of malt still coming through, but the hops are not gone, but way subtle.
Oh, yeah, you do get them definitely in the flavor, though. Lots of hop bitterness in the mouthfeel.
But it's not as harsh and laying on your tongue that it was before.
Yeah, and now the aftertaste, which on the first one lingered with bitterness, the aftertaste lingers with malt.
Oh, alcohol.
Alcohol.
And
it's the higher alcohols that really get it. It's first the malt's on there, and then it just slicks down, and it's the higher alcohols.
That's a lot better beer. All right. Okay, let's move on, and we'll taste the other one later on, too. This one I think we'll finish, huh? This one's better.
Well, maybe Danielle will have kinder words for this one.
Did you try it? Danielle didn't like the first one at all.
No, because I just don't like when I can taste the alcohol so much in beer.
Okay.
So I'm going to give it a try.
And she's in a hateful mood anyway.
Yeah, she hates everything. Give her Jamil's beer right now, she'd hate it.
No, I would never hate Jamil's beer. What, are you nuts?
She's your biggest fan, Jamil.
I am.
Danielle is wonderful.
Awesome.
Now I'm happy again.
Well, what do you think of that one?
Well, it's I like it better than the first one, I believe.
Yeah.
But it's still, the bitter taste of it and the aftertaste is not good on me.
Okay, we got one more to go.
Just go ahead and slam the rest of that down.
And is it going to make it any better?
No, but it'll make you feel better.
Get you out of that hateful mood.
Yeah, or worsen it. We don't know.
You guys tried to get me drunk a few weeks ago on this Ramazzotti stuff, and Jamil was hanging out here, too.
Oh,
and I had
right.
to do, like, 6 shots in a row.
Yeah, you're a lush.
I'm a lush?
Yeah, lush means you drink too much.
Oh. Okay. It could be true. No, it's not mine. It's not for me.
not the cheap date.
All right, where are we, Doc? Fermentation?
We're going to go to fermentation. Expect long fermentation with this thing. It's going to take longer to start up. It's going to take longer to ferment out. And even if you rack it to a secondary, 6 months in a secondary isn't out of the question either.
Really?
Yep. It's going to take, Jamil said, up to about 5%. Everything's cool.
Yeah.
And then it takes a while. Things slow down. It's got to mow through a lot of residual sugars.
So you're going to think nothing's happening because it's so slow.
Yeah.
But it's still going.
It's still mowing. It's
so what are we talking? If you're saying 6 months in secondary, what are we talking in primary?
8 months? More?
On the
I mean total.
Total. Yeah. Yeah. How much just on the yeast in the primary?
3 weeks, probably.
3 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not highly above average.
Yeah. But there's some tricks people do, too, before racking. And one of them's, you got that residual left that you're trying to go through. It slows down. One thing I know a few people do is they actually kick up the yeast every day. Even up to twice a day. Once it gets real low. I got one guy who uses what's called a leaster. It's used in wine. You put it on your drill. You go to real slow speed. Two little blades pop out as the centrifugal force moves it, and that makes a nice swirling in the bottom.
Interesting.
Give your yeast access to those sugars, because if they're sitting on the bottom, it's real hard for them to get access to that. Right.
Two or three layers down.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you think about that, Jamil?
Well, and also that tends to introduce a tiny bit of oxygen as well, and
be careful.
The yeast scavenge that up really fast.
Okay.
Yeah. It's such a low amount that they'll absorb that.
Right. Okay. Yeah, they absorb that. But, that and one trick I use is, when things start slowing down, I go ahead and raise the temperature up on the yeast. Mm-hmm. So I'll do the bulk of the fermentation under a nice, steady, reasonable temperature. So, California ale yeast or English ale yeast or whatever you're using, I'll keep that in the, 65 to 67 range, and then as it starts to peter off, I'll raise it up and go between 67.
He said peter.
Yeah.
It's not the family show anymore. We can't control ourselves.
I'll go between 67 and 69.
Okay.
I said 69.
Oh, man.
And I love 69.
Yeah, by the way.
Because it helps the yeast get more active, finish up, and does not produce a lot of esters.
Yeah.
If you get into the mid-70s, you start to have a problem. But, raising the temperature slowly towards the end, as the yeast is starting to drop off, you raise that temperature up, and they get a little more active, and you can kind of keep bringing that up, and it'll help attenuation quite a bit.
Yeah, okay. High alcohol beers, guys out there, temp controls everything when it comes to the fermentation.
Okay,
you let it get out of hand up front, you're gonna have terrible beer.
Or you don't want it to be roller coastering up and down and up and down.
So those are both excellent points.
Okay, so two things with that. For one, plan to have this thing in a place where you can control it for like 8 months. Because you don't want it going up and down, however long you're going to have to store this. And two, certainly don't let it go up and down, or what a waste of 8 months. Then if it comes out bad, it's really a waste of it.
The primer's not so hard. It's it's not finishing down. It's stuck at 1040 kind of stuff.
Okay.
You gotta baby it.
Okay. Now talk real quick about why it's important to do a secondary in this case and to get it off of that yeast bed after, a relatively short period of time, the 3 weeks or whatever it's going to take, and then to actually keep it fermenting in secondary. Why are you doing that?
Mr. Malty?
Yeah, I was going to say, Jimmy, I want to hear him negate that one, but...
Well, I don't.
Don't do a secondary in these either.
No.
He doesn't like. He doesn't think it's worth the trade-off of introducing any kind of infections
and
or anything else.
You're removing it from the very yeast that is going to ferment the wort, ferment the beer. So like Chris was saying, stirring up the yeast. Well, if you take it off of that yeast cake,
Yeah.
What are you going to stir up? I mean, I think maybe people had some success, you know, racking it to another container. They introduce some oxygen,
yeah.
and the yeast pick that up. They can, at any time during the process, they can absorb that oxygen and create sterols, make their cell walls more permeable and ferment a little bit more. So, you know, people are probably doing that, and they had some success. But I think if you pitch a, you know, the proper amount up front,
yeah.
You know, and let it ferment out. In, you know, most high gravity beers, I can have them finished in 2 weeks, and you know, the yeast will drop. You give them time to reabsorb the diacetyl and you know, clean up after themselves, acetaldehyde, things like that. Once that's done, then you go ahead and put it in another container, and you can put it in a keg and keep it warm or whatever if you want.
But okay.
I just go right to the fridge. But
you are still getting it off of that bed of yeast when it's done with that main fermentation.
Well, it's completely done. But yeah, I don't do a secondary, like people talk about putting it in another carboy and letting it sit there warm, you know, for another week or two. I don't bother with any of that stuff. I just let it go until I'm sure that it's done fermenting. I give it a couple extra days to clean up. And then, you know, I'll go ahead and put it in the keg. And then, you know, you need, on a big beer, you need a year at least before that thing's ready. 6 months to a year before you could start drinking it. You know, don't even touch it until then.
Okay,
great.
Yeah, all right. Hey, and then just talking about the stirring up the yeast, someone was curious about how about a giant stir plate for a carboy? Can you do that?
Actually, I'm building one right
now. Are you really?
Yeah.
You, just a giant stir plate?
Yeah.
Some people have way too much free time in their hands.
Talk your...
I've got about halfway done.
I
got
to see this thing. Where are you going to put it?
Who cares?
It's going to be mobile.
It will be.
It's going to be in the bedroom.
Yeah. Jamil, I'd like to bring you into this part of a conversation. All day long I get phone calls about, okay, they didn't add enough yeast, they didn't do nutrient properly up front, they, you know, and they made this big beer and they want to get it, you know, say they started at 1090 and they got it down to 1048 and it stopped. What are some of the tricks? I mean, I know mine, but what are some in your mind to get it going again?
Make a starter. And you know, get it active, get it to high croizen, you know, at 6 hours in or whatever it would be, 6 or 8 hours in, and then dump that whole thing in there.
Well, what are your thoughts about getting it off of, like, sometimes when you get an unhealthy ferment, you made a lot of byproduct that you don't want there. They're toxins that inhibit fermentation.
Well, the most toxic thing is alcohol.
True,
and that's pretty much it. I think, if the yeast that was in there wasn't healthy and it's totally stressed out and dying, I'd go ahead and rack it off that yeast. That's going to introduce a little bit of oxygen. I'd pitch a nice active starter, and toss that in there, and that'll go. Dry yeast is also a really good alternative. I think the US 56, I would use that dry yeast in a big beer if I got stuck, and I'd try that first. If that didn't work, maybe I'd go to champagne yeast or something. But generally, I don't run into those issues.
But there are ways to recover if you...
Sure. I'll throw a few more in there. Same line, make a good starter. Sometimes getting it off the old yeast, stirring it up quite a bit, doing Jamil's, raise the temperature up a little bit.
Yeah.
All those things for you guys out there who are having some problems with the ferment, those are great ways to get it going again.
Now, can this go with any beer, or does it pretty much only happen with the high gravity guys?
It can happen. I mean, we get guys who call all the time who are consistently finishing at 1025 gravities.
Wow.
Anything over 5%, once it reaches 5%, the yeast will die out if they're not able to move the alcohol outside.
Not enough of them, or they're not healthy enough to do it.
Oh, right. And so that's why the higher the alcohol content or, you know, the gravity you're going for, you need more yeast because of those ones that are going to fall out. You need a few to stick around to keep it going up.
You need them healthy so they can deal with that high alcohol environment.
Okay.
And as Jamil was saying, if the cell wall isn't permeable enough, if they aren't healthy enough,
they're
not going to be able to transfuse things in between cell wall inside and out.
Now, by healthy, like, I can't go run a mile, but I can deal with the high alcohol content real well, right? Are we talking about the same thing here?
I'm not sure that's healthy.
Right. It's not the same thing?
Well, the yeast can bud, like, what is it, 20 to 30 times before they have so many scars on them that they can't properly function anymore.
Okay.
So, you know, if you put in a real small amount and they reproduce to a certain amount, you end up with a bunch of scarred up yeast that won't do very well. And you can end up with, you know, a lot more mutation the more reproduction you get.
Okay. A quick question for you, Jamil. I'm sure you just can answer it pretty quick. We've had it come up before. From a listener in the chat, I'm making a big Russian Imperial later this month and want to know what you think about chilling the wort to 60, then pitching, and letting it naturally rise to 67 as the fermentation progresses.
That's fine. I don't worry about pitching cold on ales. I usually pitch right at the fermentation temperature or maybe a degree or two below. But I wouldn't bother with getting it low enough.
But that's sort of your process with a lager, though, right, where you'll pitch cold and then let it warm up?
Yeah, definitely on the lagers. I think it makes a big difference in the overall cleanliness of the lager.
So would you say maybe don't bother chilling that Imperial Stout down that far? Just get it to firm temp? And
yeah, I would just go with – and the other issue is, you know, when you chill wort for lager down to the 40s, bacteria doesn't really do very well in the 40s, and you're okay. But in the 60s, 70s, bacteria does a lot better.
Gotcha.
So there's another reason why I wouldn't delay as much on a warmer beer.
Just a thought, is he talking about, you know, you're going to get heat from fermentation anyway.
Yeah.
And it's going to shove it up a few degrees. And I don't know, maybe he's thinking he doesn't have any way to control it. So if he starts lower and he thinks he's going to get 5, 6, 7 degrees out of fermentation temperature, it's going to end up right at 67.
Yeah,
he starts at 67, he's going to add 5 degrees on that and end up at 70, 72.
Yeah. If that were the case, I'd start maybe like 64. I wouldn't go all the way down to 60, though.
What Jamil was saying is you want to have a fast ferment, a fast start to your ferment to get things established. At 60, the yeast isn't going to want to start very fast.
What you do want to make sure is when you start it that you have at least somewhat of a control. I think what happens to a lot of guys is they started at 67, but they have no way of controlling that fermentation on a high alcohol like that. Or high potential beer gets up to 74, 75, and all of a sudden they have just fusels everywhere.
Yeah, and it goes nuts up to that point. So
yeah, you have to have temperature control. Like Chris was saying, temperature control in high gravity beers, fermenting high gravity beers, is really critical.
They don't like the roller coaster up and down. It stresses them too much, and when they get past that 5%, they're going to have trouble getting past that point. So treat them nice.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, let's get into priming. If you're going to do the priming in the bottles, generally with a big barley wine, you're going to have some residual sugar left. So you got to be kind of careful. If you just dump in your cup or 3/4 of a cup, you're going to end up probably over-carbonating everything. Because it's still going to have some residual sugars, even a little bit left in there. So you're going to want to kind of cut back on the priming sugar a little bit.
Well, you also don't usually want a barley wine always at the same carbonation level that you would want a Pilsner.
Right. So this was my next point. Usually barley wines are a lot less carbonated anyway. So you don't want to even go over the point of it being a pale ale. It's also going to be a slow ferment, too, to carbonate. So it's going to take a while. It's going to take longer than usual. So don't be sticking it in the warm closet for 2 weeks and thinking it's going to be all okay again.
You can't drink it then anyway.
Double that time or a lot more?
You got to check them out. See where it is and what it is, but you don't want bottle bombs either.
Which is, again, with the brew the biggest batch you can, like Jamil said, so that you can do that. Mm-hmm. Check it out and see where your carbonation is.
Another way to kind of help do that is do another pitch right at the end. Introduce some new healthy yeast into it.
Uh-huh.
But you don't want to do that right in the priming bucket.
You want to do it.
Secondary, primary, whatever you got.
Okay.
Possibly 2-3 weeks before that, a nice healthy dose of that. It's going to take down a lot of the residual sugars that you're going to have in there. Get you down to where you think it's going to be, like a well fermented out beer. And then you can better dose what you're going to have for the priming sugar.
Okay.
There's two times, in my opinion, that kegging is like paramount to bottling. And that's lager beers and high alcohol ales. And it's really from the idea of, like, you've stressed your yeast out pretty good trying to go through this fermentation. Then you're trying to add a little sugar left and get it back in to ferment again. where this is really where it's worth having a kegging setup, and then counter pressure bottle fill them after.
Gotcha.
And I know people don't want to hear that word because they don't like those things, but it's really, you get the control because you can get your carbonation exactly where you want it, then bottle it, and then be able to store it for long periods
and
of time.
And not having to worry about whether it carbonated or not.
Yeah. Now, see, I agree with you about the ease of use and doing the forced carbonation, and certainly the control, so you can get it exactly where you want it. So I'm a big fan of the forced carbonation. I've been reading, there's a philosophy out there that says, and the people that believe in it really believe in it, that bottle conditioning is such a better process to do with these big beers, because it actually will give you more of a smoothness in your carbonation in the beer. And one thing that I read, and I don't know whether it's true or not, but the person was talking about the actual mouthfeel and more of the beer across your palate through a bottle conditioned beer, as opposed to, and I don't know if the actual carbonation bubbles then are larger or smaller.
Chemical element of CO2 does not change. I don't care how you get it.
Okay.
Now you have yeast.
Okay.
In the bottom of the bottle, that's your big difference.
Okay.
And I think that can actually lend to some people perceiving it to age faster, because you have yeast down there that are causing more, I don't know, for lack of a better word, reactions to occur in the bottle.
Okay.
As opposed to being completely clean and cut off from any molecular activity going on.
Okay. Well, that, and, you know, the yeast, when they cough up and die, they're going to release a lot of fats and a lot of other gunk that's going to be in there. Those yeasts don't stay alive. They die after a few months.
Right.
And you end up, everything that's in those yeast cells, when they break down, yeah, ends up in the beer.
In the beer.
So you may perceive that as being smooth and creamy or whatever, but the CO2 is the CO2, just like Chris said. There's absolutely no difference.
So that's what I would have thought, too. But there are definitely commercial breweries out there that you can look on their websites and see this, that are doing bottle conditioning, and these are some of the things that they say. And I'm not talking about big guys. I'm talking about guys that I respect in the industry, and that you know, I know, and particularly Jamil respects too, that are saying the same thing just about this bottle conditioning deal. So.
I think for one thing to mention, it is an art to actually time it, especially on the level of brewing they're doing. They're usually, like, a lot of times halting fermentation,
yeah,
taking the pressure relief valve off,
right,
and having the CO2 during fermentation create the – that's an art.
Seriously, it's a difficult
thing.
They're
not adding anything back for priming.
But it's also cheaper. I mean, okay, they're not spending the money to have the CO2 brought in, yeah, to do. I mean, relative, I'd say most very small breweries wouldn't do it for that reason, because the money's, yeah, not
but
that
you,
big.
But you look at, you know, Sierra Nevada, and they're, you know, I love Sierra Nevada as far as, you know, go to the brewery and see all the stuff they're doing, and their interest in making a perfect beer is really high.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they got a bunch of scientists and beer geeks there that love playing around. And what they do is they actually filter out all the yeast. And then they, they add back a very slight trace of yeast to, you know, specifically measured into the beer,
yeah,
to do the bottle conditioning. And the reason, you know, they're doing it is to get, you know, to absorb any of the oxygen that ends up in the bottle for longer shelf life.
Okay.
And you know, they put such minute amounts of yeast in there. As a home brewer, you know, if you're ending up with a big old yeast cake in there, you, yeah, don't need that. You just need the very slightest dusting in the bottom of the bottle after it settles out. So it's just a tiny bit.
Well,
a huge amount.
Let's tie all this together with the fact that we've been building this thing since we started talking about it for the long haul. It's going to have to, you know, age a long time. We've bumped the hops up, so we're going to lose the hops over time. We've already compensated for that one. The yeast, it's going to hurt the yeast, so we've overcompensated for that one, too.
Yeah.
And now, you know, having that big yeast cake in the bottom of that bottle for a long period of time, as Jamil said, it's going to spit out nasties.
Yeah.
It's got to go somewhere, and it's going to come into your beer, and the less of that, the better.
Well, plus, your friends don't like to look at, you know, the bottom of their glass and to see a whole bunch of floaters in,
sure,
there.
Or how often do you got to grab the bottle out of their hand as they're taking their home brew up to their face?
No, don't do that. And I know what Jamil's talking about, too. I think everybody's seen it in both commercial beer and probably homebrew, the difference between what you two are talking about and actual chunks of yeast in there and an actual light dusting on the bottom of the bottle. And you can really see that. I know
and
exactly.
And that usually will stick.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Can actually
it stays there.
You can decant that that off, and it almost all comes out clear if you're careful.
And that's the, like, for me, and I think Jamil will back me up on this, when we teach people how to brew, I am a huge fan of going to a, whatever you're fermenting in, hopefully glass or stainless, for me, 6.5-gallon glass carboy. My beer doesn't move for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then from there it goes into my keg or into a bottling bucket. All this racking usually ends up keeping everything so light and fluffy that it just transfers to the next one, and into your bottles.
Gotcha.
Getting that compaction over 2 weeks is huge.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. I just want to go back real quick because it was a specific question from the chat room about whether or not you're actually adding then less priming sugar than you would normally.
Yes.
In a barley, you are doing
yes,
that.
Because there's going to be residual sugars left over that the yeast hasn't chewed through yet.
Okay.
So it's real easy to overcarbonate with that.
Okay.
Because it's going to keep moving slowly. It's going to happen.
How is there any sort of a calculation that you can do to know how much priming sugar to add?
I would stick down to half a cup, probably 5 gallons.
I'd tell people to do 50% of what they normally do.
Just cut in half. Okay.
Yeah. Because you want a lower, I mean, taste you these beers. These aren't hugely carbonated to start with.
Yeah. You want to be, it's going to want to be lower anyway.
Okay.
And you're going to get somewhat back from what's left in the wort anyway.
Okay.
It hasn't been chewed up yet. And then you're going to add some more in there. And what Chris was talking about with the commercial brewers is they don't go to putting priming sugar back in. They just stop the fermentation at a certain point with that much residual sugar, cap it off, and that's what they use to carbonate with. It's cheaper. It is easier. It's an art form in that.
They do the same. The thing I think a lot of homebrewers lose sight of, they do the same thing over and over and over again. So the art form becomes a little less of an art form once you get it down. Then you can know, okay, at this gravity, boom, cap it off, don't worry about it.
But getting there.
But we don't do the same batch over and over again.
Yeah, we don't do the same beer over and over again.
Yeah.
Single beer all the time, same thing.
Well, Colin Kaminsky, brews for Downtown Joe's, the one who told me, and I learned a lot from this, and we basically did it together, was brew the same batch of beer, try to, 5 times in a row. And you learn a lot about trying to get consistency going when you do that, as opposed to, oh, I'm going to make a porter this time, a stout, you know, IPA. It really, you're all over the board, but you do the same batch and you want it to taste the same. That's the key to learning your system, your brewery, your yeast handling, everything like that.
Okay. All right. Can we call that a wrap on the high gravity discussion, boys?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Jamil, are there any, you know, tips that you haven't given that are in that article you want to mention real quick, or do we do it?
Let's see here. Okay, so bigger the beer, the more fermentable the wort should be.
Okay.
Use lower mash temperature, highly fermentable extracts, or simple sugars that are 100% fermentable.
Okay.
Keep in mind there's going to be an increase in caramelization and melanoidin production and a decrease in hop utilization when you're making a big wort. So you need to cut back on your specialty grains.
Okay.
Do a full wort boil, as the guys were saying.
Definitely.
And, you know,
full
more hops. And then if you're brewing extract-based batch, hold back a large percentage of your extract for the end of the boil.
Okay, good tip.
Keep it under 1050 to start when you're doing your hop utilization. And if you're doing all grain, use a slow, steady runoff. Steady is the key. If you go, you know, on and off, you're going to compact that grain bed down.
And you don't want that?
No, you really don't, because it'll lock solid, rock solid, and you won't get your wort out.
You'll end up with a big dough ball.
Is that always? You always don't want a real high compacted one, or just
no,
in
you
this?
No, you want it to flow through all the grains,
right,
not just around the outside.
Rinse those sugars out of there. Morgan at EJ Fair. He actually raises his hose up as it comes out of his mash tun. He raises it up over the height of the mash and then back down into where he's running it off. And what that does is just smooth out the ebbs and flows in the runoff.
Yeah.
And kind of just smooths it out a little bit.
Gotcha.
And you end up with a little bit better control, and it won't get compacted down.
Okay, good tip.
So, and then if in the end after you do your mash or whatever, and you check your, you know, you get your refractometer or you get a sample jar and cool it down, and you find in your boil you don't have the right amount of sugars in there, you're not at the right gravity, just add some extract in there, or add some table sugar in there, it'll be fine. You can add, you know, 30% extract, and you'll never know it in a big beer. it'll seem like all grain.
Okay.
You know, you can add quite a bit of sugar and you'll be just fine. So cool. If you come up 1070 and you meant to be at 1090, just dump in some extract and sugar and you'll be okay.
So a good idea just to keep some around, even if you've planned not to use it, go ahead and buy yourself a couple pounds of this stuff.
You know, DME for starters, you know, so keep some DME around for starters. And then if you run up short, you can always dump the DME in the bed.
Hitting the big gravity off a mash is tough.
Yeah.
You get above 170, your error level's going to go up.
I was hoping you were going to say above 1050.
You 1040.
Yeah, with me.
So having that bailout of having some DME around, especially with the big beer, I'm a big proponent of hitting your gravity.
Yeah.
Don't just settle.
Right.
You can throw it in there at the end and get it back up to the 1090 you wanted it to be.
Yeah.
Two things that can never hurt. Have a little extra DME around, like Jamil was saying, and then have an extra, like, whatever, US-56, Safale, any dry yeast in the fridge.
Oh, okay.
Those are two, like, things as homebrewers are great things to have around.
And the extra DME as opposed to liquid malt extract, because DME will store longer too, right?
It's dried out further, so it's easier to deal with. If you need a smaller increment, trying to weigh out like a half pound of liquid
yeah,
is
sure.
not easy, and it'll store way easier. Just keep it away from moisture.
Okay.
You'll get more gravity points out of the dry, too.
Okay. Good tips there. All right. Jamil, that about it?
Yep.
All right, cool. Hey, I think everyone's ready to go brew some pretty good, this is a pretty full discussion. I don't know that we left anything out of there, so... try your high-gravity beers. And speaking of, Daniela, is Yinzer in the chat room there today with us tonight?
Yinzer, I know. I haven't seen him around today.
Oh, are you serious?
No, I'm sorry. You got to postpone it then.
The guy's been waiting weeks. He sent us a barley wine that he just thinks is the nectar of the gods. And whether it is or not doesn't matter. As a home brewer, you brew a beer that you think is the nectar of the gods,
send it in.
Good for you. Just good for you in general. And that's awesome. You know, if you enjoy it that much, I don't care what you're doing, you're doing it right.
Well, you're a home brewer. You're doing this for you and your friends.
So,
can always hear your impression of it on the archives.
That's what I was saying. Let's do it for the archives.
Okay, we'll do it then. Because I waited for the show to do this, and he gave me shit about it on the forum and all this about not drinking it, and I wasn't not drinking it. I just thought it'd be perfect to do a listener. It's a barley wine that he just said came out great.
This is the perfect time to do it.
Okay.
Except the part that he's not here.
Except that he's not here. Well, let's take a real quick break, and we come back. We've also got our last bottle of Bigfoot, which is now the 2004, so we'll taste that when we come back. We'll taste Yinzer's, and we'll try to wrap things up.
Can you play Titties and Beer?
Is that what they want?
That's what I want.
That's what you want? Yeah, I'll play Titties and
Beer. That's what we all want.
Thank you.
I will. I'll put Titties and Beer on at the break, so if you got your kids there, get them out.
I feel strange being right across the table from her, and she says that.
Don't be scared.
This is highly uncomfortable right now. Jamil, thanks for helping us out, man.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
All right, so
sounds like you're in the studio with us.
It really is cool. I like this guy.
We're going to miss you, Jamil, for all this long time you're gone.
Well, just think of me drinking all that fine German and Belgian beer.
Oh, snap.
You mad. You leave Saturday, huh?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I wish you luck out there. I hope you don't get the chicken's disease.
Yeah, watch out for seriously. No, Germany.
It's only in Florida. It is in Germany, too.
It is in Germany.
That's right.
But it's not as bad as the Florida strain.
Yeah, the Florida strain is real bad, so you're all right. And heck, you guys wear masks and gloves all the time anyway, right?
Absolutely.
All around
the kids.
So you don't have to worry about it anyway. Really, thanks a lot, Jamil.
All right, take care.
All right, we'll see you. So there you go, the great Jamil Zana chef helping us out. Quick break. When we come back, we're going to do the two tastings, have a little bit of fun, and get the hell out of here.
Titties and Beer.
I'll play Titties and Beer. I got another
titties
one.
Titties and Beer.
Two songs. I'll play this one first, and then Titties and Beer right after that. It's the Brewing Network. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Come snooping around.
And now, back to three guys with absolutely nothing better to do. The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network. Woo-hoo!
I really don't have anything better to do. So I'm here every single Sunday. Nothing else to do. except hanging out with you guys and drinking beer, and that's good enough for me. Right, Daniela?
Right.
What's wrong with you?
Titties and beer.
I couldn't find the song. I even
titties
had a bunch of...
Titties and beer.
Even had a bunch of dead air in there.
Thanks God Almighty for titties and beer.
Do it again so I don't talk through it.
Titties and beer. Titties and beer. Thanks God Almighty for titties and beer.
That's right. That's a cutout clip right there if I ever heard one.
So I see you're wearing your gay shirt now.
Yeah, I had to put on my shirt that Chris and Jamil made for me.
Is that the official coming out of the closet?
No.
Good.
That happened a long time ago.
Yeah, that was like episode 2, wasn't it? That was back in June or something like that. We got a couple beers here to taste, one listener brew, and then our last Bigfoot. And I'm real pleased with the high-gravity discussion that we gave today. If you have any further questions, please feel free to Skype us at the Brewing Network or call in at 888-401-BEER or just ask Danielle in the chat room and she'll...
Yeah, we'll be here for a few more minutes. And
yeah, we're going to hang out and have
a few things to drink here.
Yeah, and then we're going to have the gay sleepover party afterward.
Well, I thought that was next week. I didn't bring my jammies.
You don't need jammies.
Yeah. My jammies.
That word alone is pretty good.
That's what I'm saying. There's only two places you're allowed to say jammies. It's when you're telling your kids to get into them and when you're at the gay sleepover party. Everywhere else, there's no jammies. Okay, so what do we want to do? Do Yinzer's beer here? You guys are warming that up. My fridge is unbelievably cold.
I'll bring my jammies.
Everything there is...
I get jammies with feet in them.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah. It's a one-piecer.
You have a little trap door on that thing?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
No, it's a zip all the way up the front. I liked my kids when he was like about 2, and I said to my wife, you know what I want for Christmas?
Yeah.
I want some jammies with feet in them. She got me a full adult size, you know, the fleece looking things.
Oh, yeah.
And it was full adult size with jam with feet in them. And
dude, that's awesome. Can you wear that to the next show?
I go, where the hell? Yeah. It's kind of itchy. But I was like, where the hell did you find that?
Yeah. And how often do you wear it?
Not that often.
Only on Jammy Jam night.
If I'm going to spend the night next week between the shows, I'll bring them.
That'd be hilarious.
I'll tell you what, I would own a pair if I could fit into some, so I'm going to have to look and see where I can get a good size. Yeah. I love the good vinyl feet things. Those are my favorite. I haven't tried it yet, Danielle. You don't get to try it yet.
She'd like it.
So we got Yinzer's barley wine here, and I got a few notes on it. He did send in. It was on the bottle,
Tell us about it.
Maris Otter, British Crystal, is the malt. Challenger and Kent Goldings and Fuggles are all the hops. Brewed it in December of 2003.
Okay.
So it's a well-aged guy here. And his original gravity was 1.1, and his final was 10.25. 10% is what he's got written down here as the ABV. So off of your aroma, you get anything there, Doc? It's very sweet barley wine.
It's very sherry-like with the smell. No hops.
That's a pretty well-aged beer right there in terms of time, so it definitely picked up some oxygen.
Smells English style with the extreme lack of hops, just a lot of malt character.
Almost no hops in here. And that's just because it's been 2003. It's almost all faded out. Tasting wise, to me, it tastes like a tawny port.
What is that?
Wine. It tastes like a port.
Yeah, okay, I know what a port is.
But it's a tawny port. It's a different style rather than a ruby port.
Okay.
And I like it. But that's what it tastes like. It doesn't really... do the barley wine thing. There's almost no carbonation in this.
See, I would say none whatsoever. Zero.
It does taste like a tawny port.
An interesting thing, I was reading his bottle. He brewed it in 1223, but didn't bottle till 1005. I think if you leave a beer in a unsealed situation,
yeah.
Remember, oxygen goes through water. Part of water is oxygen. So an airlock isn't 100% impervious to oxygen transfer. And the first thing, you know, when you taste a beer that's real sherry-like, it's usually because of a high oxygen pickup.
Okay.
And so this definitely has those characters. And I think one thing you might want to try is the same recipe. Go like a few weeks, a couple months, bottle it right away.
Okay.
And see, because I think like this has a very English style, high sherry notes, high everything like that, which actually gives it a very complex flavor.
Yeah.
But this beer would be way different and I think could last a lot longer if it was bottled right away and stored in a proper temperature.
Right. That being said, the English style is you know, the original style of barley wine too, which doesn't necessarily include oxidation, but it does really have that much more of a malty and very flat English style barley wine. I like the flavor. Is it a little chocolatey?
Yeah, it's got raisins, some brown sugar kind of notes to it.
Yeah,
it tastes like an old wine.
I think I got the bottom of the pour because
no, you didn't.
Oh, I didn't. Oh boy,
I made sure you didn't.
I got a creamy, very. I don't know. I'm looking at Justin's and it looks brown. Mine looks
red. But
it's just the lighting in here.
Yeah.
But the first pour was not
yours
clear.
Does look red though.
Not clear at all.
I'm watching.
We didn't shake the bottle up.
In fact, it's been chilled since he gave it to me and upright. I've not really moved it. So.
I'm going to guess that he would have had to if he added more yeast. I have a feeling it just never settled out. But he would have had to add more yeast if he did, because 2 years later the yeast isn't going to be able to.
If he racked it a couple of times, the second, third time, it's going to leave what's in suspension is the stuff that doesn't want to flocculate. So you're going to selectively grab whatever it is.
Okay.
So that could be why it's still not clear.
Yeah. What do you think of the beer as overall?
I like it.
I think it's really got a nice, sweet English style flavor to it. You're right about the raisins.
It's very nectary.
Yeah.
As he said, it's like nectar and it's
cidery, nectary.
Yeah. If you told somebody it wasn't beer and you tried to tell them it was something else, they'd believe you.
They might believe you, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they would like it.
Yeah, I think you're right. You serve it to them in a wine glass, and you say, give this a go, they'd like it. I think you're right.
Plus, if someone drinks a whole one of these, they're going to be pretty damn drunk.
Yeah, I should have saved it for that. Yinzer, nice work. I would say that Chris's suggestion for you is a great suggestion if you did keep it around that long before actually putting it in the bottle. Bottle it earlier.
And if you're like Chris, you probably let the airlock go dry a couple times.
Hey, Scott, don't bring personal stuff into this.
It's good.
You like
that, I definitely
that, huh?
prefer the British
you
style over the American style. It's great.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think it's good.
Yeah, the English style is a little more of my favorite, too.
Yeah,
although
it's just smoother in the beginning. Like, to me, this smells a little like it has some sort of like a coffee smell to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you drink and it's very smooth, and it's smooth like on the tip of your tongue and also in the back. I really think it's a great beer.
Yeah.
It's nice work.
The aftertaste is all toffee.
This beer is almost as old, not quite. Mm-hmm. So you didn't get to try this one, but try this one relative to your thoughts on the first one you tried, or even this one.
And this is the Bigfoot again?
This is the Bigfoot, but this is now...
So this one's 2004.
How old is this one?
2004.
2004 Bigfoot.
And the beer you just drank from Yinzer is 2003.
Okay,
but it's a whole different style.
It's also 2003, so it's kind of...
Yeah, true that. So... Yeah, so it was basically 2004.
Okay, so
see how it's coming around?
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
It's that age that gives it a much cleaner flavor.
Yeah. So I've definitely learned today that it has to age for quite a few years,
so
right?
So that 2006 was just too harsh and too green for you.
It must be good, because now
right
she's finishing my beer.
Right. It's all done. Although, you know, no matter how you look at it, the Bigfoot is not an English-style barley wine.
It's never
going to turn into that toffee, coffee, very flat, all malt barley wine that an English style is.
No, these are two different styles,
yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, it's definitely an American style. Now, I actually, in tasting this 2004 that we're having now.
Do you have to pee again?
Mm-mm.
You're standing up.
I've been standing up the whole show. It's my new thing. I prefer to stand up now. Okay. I do. It gives
you show us your package?
I want you guys to be able to look at my my man junk.
He's not wearing pants right now.
Yeah, it's because I've got no pants on.
This is not pants off Friday.
It's something about the way the desk is designed. I asked them to design it higher, and my seat is too low, and I just have discovered that I have more control, and I'm a little more energetic if I stand up through the show And I'm sure that, like, between you and, like, guests and stuff, I'm going to make people so friggin' uncomfortable that I stand up the whole show now.
I thought it was
now.
A power trip more than anything.
Yeah, I'm just like, I am above you now.
I am above you. I'm taller than you.
Well, you know where I discovered it? On the Friday show, my nuts were hurting. And I was sitting.
They're hot nuts?
Yeah. And I was like sitting on them the whole show.
Does that have anything to do with Jason?
No. He's practicing tucking them under.
It's just they're sort of large and I tend to sit on them every now and then.
And you get older.
Especially as I get older and as it gets warmer in the studio. For example, when we first started the show and I was sitting down, I was fine. But as the studio warmed up after half an hour, I progressively sat on my nuts more and more. So I realized that by standing, I alleviate that problem.
I know that problem.
Anyway, back to this. I actually like the 2005 better than I like the 2004 in terms of 2005 being seems a little more malty even than the 2004. And it's really, they're all different beers. All three, it's like drinking a completely different beer.
We're just continually smoothing it out. You know, that's kind of the interesting thing. As it ages, all your peaks and valleys are just getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
And, this has less of that alcohol, and that's why I like it better.
Gotcha.
Just that initial alcohol hit of the last one was just a little too much. So
that's a good point.
We say we bust into your roommate's room and see if we can find some 2003.
Yeah, I know. No, he's the one. He said, hey, this is all I got, but you're welcome to it. He gave me the 04. I think he didn't start appreciating barley wine until 04. So,
well, we got
to
thank him.
Yeah. He kept it right next to his Coors Light collection as well that he's been aging.
Those who are going to be aging their beer, temperature, again, is everything. You let this sit through a California summer, it's going to be garbage no matter what.
Right.
You really want to get it somewhere where it's not going to go up and down, ideally just like wine, somewhere in the 50s or colder.
Yeah.
But I can really tell the difference because the barley wines we have tried at that barley wine festival at the Tornado last week or the week before, they were really all smooth, but I think they were all at least 2 or 3 years old. And a lot of them were really older, like the British ones we tried, they were like from 89 and 87.
Yeah, those ones were much older.
Yeah.
Although some of the ones from the microbrews around here were this year's vintage.
Really?
And those were the ones that tasted like double IPAs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But you're right. The ones that really had that flavor that Yinzer's beer has there were, not only were they English barley wines, they weren't from here, but they were, you're right, aged from 89.
Right.
And I think we even had one from 95. But the same thing, it's still obviously long enough ago to just really have mellowed out.
Well, the only way you're going to age a beer from 89 that long is you take a digger on your motorcycle
and
you get a brain injury and you just kind of forget.
Yeah. Or you store it at your house.
Yeah.
What you see a lot of people doing with high gravity brewing now, too, is aging in bourbon barrels. Jamil and I did that for the Vegas homebrew show.
Oh, nice.
Just different barrels, because what you get out of a barrel is a fair amount of oxygen. They call it micro-oxygenation because it's such a small amount at a time. And that adds a lot of these flavors, you know, of the sherry notes. But they're very soft in background. So a lot of the English styles are awesome when they've been barrel aged.
Because you're not getting an actual oxidized flavor. You're getting those notes that you get out
of
it.
Exactly. And the notes you want, and it's hard to get that balance.
Right. Okay. Well, I say Yinzer, you did a nice job. I'll say, you know, Chris Granby gave good advice. If you want to try it again, just, you know, bottle it sooner. But good beer, huh?
Excellent.
Yeah.
You know, it's very nice.
Scott finished it.
Sorry that weren't.
For what it was, you know, I could see you pleasing a lot of people with that one.
Of course, Scott already finished his Bigfoot over there, too.
Yeah, I'm still working on it.
What's next over there, buddy?
I got to get up and get something.
Yeah. Me and Doc, we're going to hang out and have a couple beers, I think.
I brought sandwiches.
Awesome. Oh, what's that, Daniela? Sorry.
Why do you keep turning me off?
Because you type too
loud. When you type, it's loud and we can hear it.
It sounds like office space in here. And it's like we're all sitting in our own little cubicle. You know what I want for you? I want your own booth.
No, I'm not going to sit in a glass house.
Yeah, like a bulletproof glass all the way around you. So that
Don't be so super protective always.
The only way that you can communicate with us is through the microphone. You can't talk off of the microphone. We can't hear what you're doing. I want you to have your own cryogenically sealed booth in there. And
it's called the bathroom.
You can just put a button on her microphone. When she wants to talk, she pushes it.
Yeah.
Then we don't have to
do it on and off. And that's... I could switch out mics, in fact. She's got a bad mic anyway. I could give her the other bad one that has a non-off switch. But it clicks. It clicks on and off.
That's no good.
Doc, we could build a sealed room for her, couldn't
we? Yes, we could. She'll never get out.
I've always wanted to do a radio show where somebody on your show is in their own sealed booth. That's just been a dream of mine.
You want her to be Robin Quivers? Or
something. I don't know. I
just, well, that's only for her own protection.
Just want the booth. I like the booth. It just seems so professional to me.
Nice, but I don't want it.
And I want you to have to, like, climb into it. Like, you can't just walk in. You gotta.
And what am I wearing while I'm climbing into it?
Could you be vacuum?
That was the vision in my head.
I know.
She stands in a little chamber. You close the door. The vacuum turns on. She gets sucked around a tube.
Right. You gotta wear like a Heidi outfit, and you gotta go like through an obstacle course to get in. For every show.
She get cheese and a bell at the
climbing
end.
Climbing and squirming.
Yeah.
Is that gonna turn you around again?
It might. Could
Ooh.
Work. It could work. It could work. Which I'd be
bring him back to our side.
I'd be willing to put up a webcam for that part of the show. I'd turn it off when the show started, but for the part where you have to go through the obstacle course to get to your booth.
You aware that you're still talking about your girlfriend?
Oh yeah.
Okay. You know, but it's all just checking.
You'll be everybody's girlfriend.
Yeah.
After that.
Tell her what the point is. It's all about
safety.
Good radio.
Exactly.
It's good radio.
It has nothing to do with you being my girlfriend. It's about good radio.
I agree.
They'll sacrifice for that.
So would I.
And speaking of...
Everybody will tune in early for that.
It's right. Yeah. The pregame. The Brewing Network pregame is always
Daniela. What's Daniela wearing today?
I did go in the video links of the website earlier and didn't see anything.
No, there's nothing there because I'm... See,
that could
I
be
am
the
of,
first one.
That's right. I'm of the philosophy that you don't put stuff up there until it's like it's above average. You know what I'm saying? It's got to be like something there. Which brings me to the point. We've had people ask about us doing a webcam
right.
during the show. Oddly enough, Graham Sanders, who does the Australian show, and I are actually in agreement about this point, which is weird because we don't agree on anything. But about the webcam during the show, I'm just not going to do it. It's not going to happen. And there's, like I said, Graham kind of said some of the same things. It really, I think it's radio, and it takes away. And basically, you don't want to see my ugly mug the whole freaking time we're doing
the
show.
I think we just point that webcam right at your nuts.
Yeah, that I might be willing to do. But
how they grow over the show?
Yeah. like have it split screen. One screen with a thermometer that shows the temperature rising, and the other one that shows my balls dropping.
That would be an interesting experiment, actually. Let's do it.
I really would be. That one I might be willing to put up. But getting the whole thing in here, I'm not into it. I think that it takes away from the experience, and it's just not the same. We're not doing a TV show.
Well, there's no skits going on.
That's right. And I want to leave it to your imagination. You know, for example, you might think that Chris is a good-looking guy. If we put a webcam in here...
You'd know the truth.
You see what I'm saying?
We'd all have to get dressed again.
Yeah, we couldn't do the no-pants show. I will say this. In the same vein of, I will do things when they're above average, when I'm breaking ground, when we're doing new things here at the Brewing Network, then I would consider it. Right now, especially with our budget and with the bandwidth that we have, it would be a grainy webcam that we'd have to like rotate by ourselves to get a look at everybody throughout the show, and that's just not attractive or entertaining or anything else.
If it like refreshed every 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous, right? I would consider in the future if we really could get a nice setup in here and have like a four-way split screen that kind of rotated images and really let you see some cool things going on. I would consider doing that for portions of the show. Sometimes there's
second year.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes there's things we do in here, Beer Jeopardy, when the cop took me down to the floor when we did the drunken show, and that kind of stuff I'd be willing to put on, but I only want the high-quality stuff.
Funny, I don't
there.
Remember that.
You know? Yeah, that's weird.
I agree.
Anyway, that's the deal with
that's going to happen in the second year of the Brewing Network, probably.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, can you recall when the Stone Show is going to be on?
The Stoned Show.
The Stone.
Oh.
the Cousin Show.
Yeah, because I was like, well, that's every show with Doc, isn't it?
I thought we nixed that, the whole Cousin Show.
Stone Brewing Company. Yeah, I can't give you a date because we haven't rescheduled it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Stone couldn't do the date that we gave them.
Right.
Some things were happening at the brewery. They couldn't, because they're not up here. They were going to travel to come hang out in the studio with us, which is pretty
awesome.
Cool. A lot like Firestone did. Yeah. Very cool. You know, traveled up from Santa Barbara to hang out with us, which is a 4-hour drive or something. It's a good trek and a very cool thing. Well, same thing with Stone. Something came up. I did talk to their rep though at the Barley Wine Festival, and they're very into doing the show. They want to be here, so it's upcoming. But they haven't given us a date yet.
Fair enough.
I'll tell you what is coming up, though, next week.
Ooh. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun. Dan Gordon's coming back in the studio next week. The great Dan Gordon coming and doing another show with us, which means we have to do Beer Jeopardy because he's great at it and he loves the game. So we got to do Beer Jeopardy. We'll be doing that next week. And kind of get into all of the things. I got to go back and listen to the Dan Gordon archive. Doc, you should too. Because there were so many moments during that show where we said, that's a whole other thing. We got to have another show. That's a whole other thing. We need another show. We kept doing it over and over. So I'm going to listen to that and try to cover as many of those things as we can. And that's the Dan Gordon
show. I had professors in college. Oh, that's a whole other lecture for a whole other time. We'll cover that later.
That you know means what? They don't know the answer.
We never did.
We do here. So we will be doing that as much as we can get to. You're really not going to want to miss that show. If you missed the first Dan Gordon show, especially tuning in live, I mean, I know a lot of you guys can't listen live, but
this is one you probably should try.
You want to give it a go because it's a whole other experience, and you're going to get to interact with this guy. I mean, Dan Gordon is hands down one of the best, at least one of the most knowledgeable of the old-style German brewers out there. His education was done in Germany.
And it's very traditional, very German, and he can back it up with all the specifics behind why.
That's right. And on top of all that, the guy's a hell of a lot of fun. Yeah. He's just a nice guy to hang out with.
So awesome.
Good personality. He's bilingual.
Speaks fluently German. Mm-hmm. Fluently, really.
In fact, we're going to talk to him because Danielle and I were talking about, not as a joke, doing a show with him, between just him and Daniela, doing a shorter show, maybe a half-hour show, to kind of market to the German market, all in German. We just thought it'd be cool. And I think Dan, he doesn't get the chance, I think, that often to be able to speak the language that he spent so much time learning. He had a great time with Daniela being able to do it in here. Mm-hmm. I thought we'd give him their own show. It was like a 30-minute show all in German.
They'd be talking about you the whole time.
I think that's fine.
Hey, at least put the camera up for that.
No, if I get a chance to talk to Dan Gordon for 30 minutes, have an interview, I'm not going to talk about this guy.
I'm bashing him.
Yeah. So
because he won't know what's going on.
Yeah, right there is the reason he's not going to let it happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, it's all talk. I'm not doing that. No, we should do it. It'll be great. So that's the Dan coming in next week. He's a lot like the Donald.
Yeah,
you know,
the Dan.
He's the Dan. And so the Dan's coming in next week and do a little more Gordon Beer
show. Yeah, so let's get some good questions coming up for him, because that's what really drives the show, is how many questions we got coming up and getting him to answer things.
Yep. Send him to my email, Justin@thebrewingnetwork.com.
He's got a ton of knowledge that we need to tap.
Yep.
And everybody enjoyed it last time quite a bit.
Oh, yeah, it was great. And I have another question coming in from a chat room about when the sanitation show now is going to take place.
We're thinking the week after. So, so 2 weeks from today, we're going to do the Dan Gordon show next week, which is going to have a lot to do with lagers again and different techniques. But I think Doc and I have got planned for the week after that.
Yeah.
We're gonna dive into the sanitation show, and I'll tell you what. Also on that show, we're going to give you a bit of a plan. Doc and I have been working on a couple of things, and we're going to talk to you about that when we do that show too. And we're going to have a sequence of events that are going to take place over a couple of shows or a few weeks of shows that are really going to help out not only the show, but it's really going to help homebrewing and techniques and different things like that. We're really putting together a good thing for you. So when we do the sanitation show, which should be 2 weeks from today, we'll talk all about that also.
Yeah, we'll let you know what the plans are, kind of what the future is going to be, at least the near future.
Yeah, then yeah, that's all we can plan, because anything past that I'm too drunk to remember anyway.
Past the next beer.
So there you go. And, I think that's about it. So next week, Dan Gordon, you're going to want to tune in for that. Of course, we got Lunch Meet on Friday. There's no Jamil show tomorrow, but the following Monday, which is after the Dan Gordon show, Doc will be hosting the Jamil show.
After the sleepover.
After the sleepover, that's right.
Maybe I'll do the show in my jammies.
that cam needs to come out for that.
Exactly. Yeah, I take everything back about the webcam. I need the thing. I need the jammy cam.
It'll work for Jamil. It'll work for Scott.
Yeah, that's true.
Jammy cam.
Jammy cam.
We have two listeners from Nebraska, wherever that might be, who want.
Daniela doesn't even know.
I've heard of that before. I think it's like one of the corn states, isn't it?
It's near like Connecticut.
It's like in the middle of this country. Yeah,
it's
somewhere.
It's right next to Mount Everest, I think.
Yeah. They have lots of snow.
Hey, I'm not stupid.
Okay.
All right. Anyways. They want to drive out to the show.
From Nebraska?
Yes.
Do they need sponsors?
What are you offering money for?
They just want to drive out to the show?
Yes.
To the Dan Gordon show?
Yes. They would have to leave tomorrow, probably, right?
Yeah, tell them to get in the car now.
Absolutely. They're welcome.
I just envision, like, the two Canadian guys driving looking for beer, you know?
That DVD.
Drinking the whole way.
American beer. I say tell them to do it. Get in the car and drive out here. We will absolutely welcome you into the studio.
And bring your jammies.
It's Offensive CJ who wants to do that, and Bugatha Brewing who wants to get married to me.
Why do they really want to drive to the show?
Because of Dan Gordon.
He's going to be building. Yeah, right. He's going to be building the cage tonight.
Yeah, I know, Doc. We got a lot of work to do.
Oh, we got to get that bulletproof glass up.
Yeah. No air holes in it either.
No
little pee-pee holes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. No glory holes.
Yeah, this isn't like the glory hole.
Now we're going the right direction.
Hey, I say let them drive out, man. That'd be cool. It'd be funny. But I want them to document the whole trip.
I was going to say, you got to document the whole trip, as it happens. Don't wait to read or to write about it at the end.
No, do it as it happens. And preferably on video. I'll put that on the video.
We want to know how many beers consumed.
Yeah.
How many beers consumed? How many crazy people you found on the way? Did you make a funny face at a kid in Utah?
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. I didn't say Bubater Brewing, did I?
Yeah, you did.
Sorry.
Bubater Brewing.
I'm so focused on titties, apparently. Tonight it's unbelievable.
What's with you?
I don't know.
It's the stripper show, folks.
He went gay. You're bound to go gay after
a while. Yeah, exactly.
Hey.
Boob eater. I want to be a boob eater.
I know you do.
We know you do, but you're not near that level yet. Look at your shirt. I mean, come on.
Wearing a lunch meat shirt. Not going to happen.
Hey, if you're a boob eater, you use less lube.
That's true. Check out our forum if you want to see these pictures, too. Apparently, there's a new disgusting boob one up there. Just hit the beer radio thread and do that. Click on our sponsors, too. That always helps. There's a donate button on there. If you got any extra change hanging around, we're happy to take it from you, you know?
No problem.
All right. I just want to say thanks to everybody. And, Chris, great having you here.
Thank you for having me.
Please come back soon.
Will do.
B3 is always very cool to us and has supported us since the beginning, so that's always a good time. Calls coming in, of course. They think I have to pee. They always call at the end of the show because they think I'm trying to get out of here to pee. But I'm good. I peed at the break.
Yes, sure.
It's probably Peter calling in. He's like, oh, I'm ready for the interview. We'll see what we got here. Hey, caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, this is the Dan Puppet. I'm going to come over next week.
The Dan Puppet.
Oh, the Dan Puppet?
Yeah.
I'm up for it. We need a Dan puppet.
Yeah, you know, I'll bring a new one. I'm a good friend of Vinny Puppet.
All the puppets hang out together?
Because they're gay.
Yeah.
Have the gay puppet show.
Where did the Vinny puppet go anyway? I had quite some questions tonight.
Let me get out of this and I'll pull my hand. Let me pull the hand out of me.
There I am.
Pull the hand out of your what?
Out of the puppet.
Hey, Jack, how you doing?
Not too bad.
Crazy Jack on the line here at the end of the show.
Yeah.
It's always a good time. You got the Dan puppet, huh?
Yeah, well, I can get a whole bunch of. We got about 10 different puppets, you know.
It's going to be a big puppet.
I can bring.
It's a lot of puppets.
I'll bring a new one.
It's a lot of puppet.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know. I'm not sure if we're ready for the Dan puppet. The Vinny puppet was one thing. Because I like to make fun of Vinny. But
do you have a meat puppet?
But we don't have a meat puppet. Yeah, maybe if you want to come to the Friday show and bring a meat puppet. Now, that's one thing. Dan's bigger than I am. That's the problem.
I know.
Vinny's my size.
JP ever wants me. He always, every time I see him at the Dawes meeting, he always says, come on over, you know.
Yeah, bring the meat puppet.
Yeah,
bring the meat puppet.
I'll even play the meat puppets at all the breaks. It'll be the whole meat puppet show. Yeah, I'm concerned about.
I think there's only one puppet, which is the Vinny puppet.
Yeah,
yeah, I think we got to scale it back to just
keep one the Vinny puppet. I don't want the Vinny puppet getting jealous either. He's a maniac.
Well, he might go away.
I've seen that guy get crazy.
Yeah, the other night, Trans and Crotch and I were chatting on tonight. So.
That just sounds weird. Trans and Crotch.
You guys go to Burning Man together? Or,
yeah, you guys were chatting about the show. Uh huh.
It's applying.
Well, we chatted after the show, you know, and. And Trans goes, you know, this is the first time I've ever had a threesome.
with Crazy Jack and Crotch Rot. Hey, it's a good one.
Okay, well, we'll see you next week.
Thanks, my friend. We'll see you later.
All right, bye.
All right, Crazy Jack wants to bring in the
Dan puppet.
The Dan puppet.
That's a lot of puppet, baby.
It's like a monkey suit. It's like the whole thing. I don't know. It's going to be a full studio next week. I have to talk to Crazy Jack. What if Crazy Jack scares Dan?
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah, we're like,
that's a thought. You know.
Dan, this is Crazy Jack. Big fan of yours.
Get over it.
Well, you never know what's going to happen. Tune in next week to find out all the details. Stay tuned all week. We got good stuff planned for you. Going to rerun this show tomorrow at 11 a.m. on Tuesday. We got the Oz Craft Brew Radio, which is always a good show to listen to, and especially because he bashes us quite a bit, which is good fun. Why I still broadcast it, I don't know. It's a good show, that's why. So, and then what else we got going on? Thursday, I think I've designated as all BN all day. I just run all old programming that we've done here, all original programming all day long. You can tune in at any time from 10 a.m. to midnight, and it's all Brewing Network programming.
All Brewing Network all the time.
Yeah. If I had that kind of a real radio voice, I'd do that. I'd do that promo for us. All BN all the time.
All BN.
BM or
BM. Yeah, all BM. Exactly. And then Friday, of course, is lunch meet, and we got another great show installed for you.
It's the French show
this weekend. It's
the French show.
It's well. For one, we already know this. It's No Pants Friday.
Excellent. Friday.
So
I saw the flyer for that.
Yeah. There's no pants allowed in the studio at No Pants Friday. So that we got that going on for us.
So much for hot nuts.
Yeah. Exactly.
Can you have them not come back to work after that?
Right. And I think I'll be sitting down for that show too. I won't be doing my normal stand up. But you never know. So tune in for that lunch meet on Friday. It'll be a good time. Next week, Dan Gordon. Daniela, thank you for all your help today.
You're welcome.
And
are you hateful anymore?
Yes.
We'll get some food.
Have some more of that.
She's giving Doc the finger right now.
Oh, it's like every show.
I can't get away with that.
He gets really upset if I don't.
Yeah, I feel like I didn't piss her off.
You got to have that. Chris, thank you too, man, for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Please come back. Doc, we'll see you next week, right?
Yes, you will.
You should bring your wife in with you.
You'll see me next week.
He's staying over next week.
You got to do that for the.
You should bring one of your goats.
For the pajama jam.
Oh, yeah, bring one of your goats.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
You can play with the biscuit in the back there.
Yeah. Oh, they're just playing.
Your dog is not going to play with a goat.
It will until the goat butts it and kicks my dog's ass.
Your dog is ridiculous.
It's like a picture with you and the sheep. That'll be yeah. Goat and your dog.
It's not just me that's gay. My pit bull's gay, too. Well, who ever heard of a pit bull getting beat up by a goat? But you can be sure that that's exactly what would happen.
Take this call.
It's right on the air. Caller, you're on the air. Not yet, you're not. How about now? Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah. It's Henning going in.
Who is it?
Henning.
Henning.
Henning, happy birthday, Henning.
Thank you.
Oh, you're man. Welcome. Are you hammered
How
on
you
your,
feeling?
On your 28?
Oh, yeah.
You've been drinking?
I haven't even finished this keg of cider yet. It's still...
You're trying to finish the keg of cider?
Oh, no.
It just happened on its own.
Where are you from, Henning?
Come on, Kansas.
Kansas.
Time you got to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
6 o'clock.
Nice.
Oh, that's rough. Turn down the volume in the background if you can find that. No.
Are you calling me for being drunk of the week, Henning?
Yeah.
You're winning.
Yeah. You're winning. You're front runner so far.
He's more like comatose of the week. It's like waiting for you to start snoring.
The legally dead of the week.
I don't have anything to give away, Doc. We got anything to give away?
Oh, yeah, we got refrigerator magnets.
Oh, I got magnets. I got BN bobblehead and freaking out magnets.
I'll make more of those shirts.
And you could have a lunch meat shirt. Chris is happy to make that
okay.
for you. Is that cool?
Yeah.
28, huh?
Yeah.
How long you been homebrewing? Tuesday.
Oh, 32 years.
Right after Father's Day last year.
Oh, okay. Did you get that for Father's Day? Was it a gift?
Yeah.
He's been married for 4 years already.
You got married at 24, dude?
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
Dude.
You're hating life, huh?
No.
That's why he's drinking on a Sunday night.
By the way, his wife was locked into the chat room as well, so she might be listening.
Hey, that's all right. She can call in, too. That's all right. She's probably hating life also. I'm not saying it's just him. 24, huh?
Yeah.
You guys got kids?
Yeah.
Well, it's Father's Day.
Did you say four?
Yes.
One for each year?
Do you even go to work? You guys just hang out and make babies?
No cable TV.
Yeah. Really? Four kids, huh?
Yeah.
Kid is wife on the phone.
Yep. Put your wife on the phone.
Okay.
Put the phone down and back away.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi. Is this Henning's wife?
Yes, it is.
Look at how awake she is. Henning's like, he's practically fallen over. He's in a coffin right now.
In a coma.
What's your name?
My name is Stephanie.
Stephanie. How can I ask your age? Would that be all right?
I'm 23.
Okay, so a year younger. And
yes, I am.
Four kids, huh?
Yes.
You guys are busy, huh?
Yes, we are.
That's great.
Is that one year younger?
How does he find time to brew?
Yeah.
That was after the kids.
Okay. Mm. And are you hating that you bought him the brew kit, or it's okay?
No, it's okay.
It's good. It saves you money on beer, right?
Yes.
So that's a good thing. And do you guys have a keg system there? Does he have it on tap?
Yeah, he's got like three kegs.
Attaboy. He's doing all right. He's doing all right.
Do you like his beer?
I don't drink beer.
You don't? What do you drink?
I don't drink anything.
Cousin.
No water?
It's because you're pregnant all the time. You can't drink anything.
That's true.
Really? No wine? Nothing?
No.
No, good for you. You're going to outlive him and
That's right.
That's the way it should be.
That's the way it should be. And you can live out a happy life and we'll all be dead.
So is he having a good birthday?
I think so.
Well, it sounds like it to us. I don't think you got to worry about it. He's doing all right.
Yeah, he's having his own little party.
He's having his own party. I like that.
She's like, I'm going to bed, honey. What?
That's right.
Come on, honey. I'm on the radio. Talk to him.
All right. Well, Stephanie, you're going to have to do him a favor and make sure he remembers to send me an email with your address and stuff, and we'll send him out some Brewing Network stuff.
Will do.
Do you ever listen to the show or just today?
No. Whenever he has it on, I have to listen.
You have to listen to the whole house.
I love that. You just have to listen.
Yes.
That's fair enough. All right. Thanks very much, Stephanie. Put Henning back on the phone just for one sec, if you would.
Okay.
Get him off the floor.
Yeah. He's just asleep already.
Propped up.
Yeah.
Are you there, buddy?
Yeah.
All right. Stephanie's going to remind you to give us an email. We're going to give you some stuff.
Okay.
We appreciate you being drunk of the week.
Drink some water.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What's your job? What do you do?
I work for a battery company shipping batteries all over the country.
Like car batteries and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Watch you guys out in California.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we like to go through stuff like that.
That's why my car won't start.
Yeah. Well, that's not too important. Yeah. You can be hungover at that job, right?
Yeah.
What's the worst that could happen? You ship the battery to the wrong place. No big deal. It's not as if you're dealing with the acid that goes into the battery.
No, I don't know.
That's a good thing.
Did you call him an ass?
No, I didn't mean to. All right, buddy, so we'll send you some stuff.
Okay.
Thanks, brother. Happy birthday, my friend.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
All right, man. Cool. Have a good night.
Yep.
He's having a good night already.
Are we having Skype-y?
Nice guy. I don't know. Why did somebody say they were trying to Skype me?
Yes.
I didn't see it. They're going to have to try again. I got to get out of here, though.
Yeah, we got to get out
of here. It's after 8, so Skype us next week. Skype us during the Friday show.
Skype is hard. Skype is long.
Such a weird name, Skype. I should ask them for sponsorship. We did some good plugs for Skype today,
it's
huh?
Skype-y. It has an E in the end.
It's a
Skype-y.
No, it's a German E. In English,
I give you a silent E.
In English, we have this silent E thing. Give him the silent E.
Hey, Oz, you're on the air, buddy.
And there he is.
Hey, mate, how you going?
Hey, Oz.
How are you going?
I'm cranky. My internet's been down all day, so I missed half the show, so I've got two quick questions.
Oh, okay.
Is the archive up yet?
Oh, we knew that was coming.
Can I ask the second question for you?
Yeah.
We're lucky you've been archived.
And where's the cider show?
Spot on.
You're an asshole.
I know.
I'm thinking, I'll tell you what, I'm going to be honest with you right now about the archive tonight. It's going to go one of two ways. I'm either going to go hang out with the doc and drink some more beer, and that means the archive isn't going to be there till like tomorrow, or I'll get
catch a Wednesday.
Or you catch a Wednesday. Or I'll get right to work afterward if Doc has to go. That's pretty much so. If the archive's not up, send your hate mail to doc@thebrewingnetwork.com because I'm blaming it on him.
See you Wednesday.
Right.
See you Wednesday.
Hey, there's no use sending Doc any emails. He's worse at answering them.
No, I don't ever get them.
It's not as fun. It's true. He now gets them. I only started forwarding them to him this week.
I couldn't get into my Brewing Network account at all. Yeah. And I've tried and tried, and he's tried to fix it. Now he just forwards it to me. I just started getting them forwarded to me. Try again.
I've seen Doc on a computer. There's a reason he can't get in.
Yeah.
It works. He just can't get in.
Yeah. Hey, Oz.
Yes.
I'm right about the dingoes, right?
Halfway right. The ones on Fraser Island are pretty bad.
That's the what I saw the special about, yeah, the one on Fraser Island.
I've seen them domesticated. I think I was talking to you the other day about them. They mix breed them, and they're a beautiful dog when they're mixed breed.
What do they mix them with? Just like some dormant dog?
Kelpies, I think, which is like a cattle dog.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. Yeah. I gotcha. But on Fraser Island, they have territories there. They like own the island.
Gangs.
And if you put one foot on it, it's like it's sawed off by dingoes.
I think it's
you're
like
in the bloods area.
The grizzly bears over there, they got used to people going over there and feeding them, so they've just got no fear.
Oh yeah,
that's the thing, and it's like their territory. The thing I was reading was that this Brit was over there, and he was there with a group, and he got lost in the woods, and it was mating season for the dingoes, and he got lost in dingo territory, and he fell over, and they ate him to bits.
You know why that happened?
Why?
Because the poms don't bath; they smell like food.
Because what? Say again.
They don't wash themselves.
The palms don't wash themselves. Yeah, so that's right. He was like leaving a trail.
They smelled him coming.
Yeah, it was the trail of tears. And then, like, just a little while after that, they ate some kid.
Yeah.
Stay away from Fraser Island.
The dingoes ate my baby.
You really got to try to get over this.
He's got this fear of dingoes now.
Oh.
I'm fascinated.
I want to see the pictures Jamil puts up from this.
Me afraid of the dingoes.
Just being eaten by a dingo.
Yeah.
It's a good idea, Chris. Take this caller.
Beating dingoes off with a stick.
Hey, caller, you're on the air, too.
Hey, man, I'm freaking out, man.
Freaking out.
Who Scott's on there?
You guys are still talking about dingoes, man? I thought that was like 2 hours.
Hey, it's a full circle kind of conversation.
Right. We like to come back around. Who are we talking to?
This is Big Chooch, man. I wanted to make it for Drunk of the Week, but it's not my birthday.
Oh,
bang.
Yeah, no, you missed it. You missed it by two phone calls.
But you do sound pretty
freaking
hammered.
Out.
It's just freaking out. Good old Big Chooch. We talked to Big Chooch's wife, Mrs. Chooch, last week.
We did.
I like Mrs. Chooch.
Yeah, she's drinking the damn barley wine stuff today.
That a girl. Last week she didn't want to drink beer much at all.
Yeah, she was all about it today.
She got her in a good mood.
Chooch, you sound stoned. You don't sound drunk.
I would.
Freaking out.
They got a lot of cousin over on the island.
Nah, man. I love you guys, man. You guys are freaking awesome.
Thank you.
Way to avoid the question. Way to avoid it.
I appreciate that. Glad that you found us over there in Hawaii. What island are you on? The big one?
I'm on Oahu.
You're on Oahu? Are you still in the military?
Yeah, I'm still in the Navy. I'll probably be getting out this summer.
Okay. Now, good luck with that.
Navy's where I learned how to drink, actually.
Good for you.
Thank God we pay for that.
That's right. Learn to drink in the Navy. Learn to make what you drink at the BN.
Yeah, drinking like a Navy man.
That's dollars right there.
That's right. I'm glad we could help.
All right, man. I'll see you guys on Sunday.
All right. Thanks, Chooch.
Hi.
Hey, maybe he could drive over to the show.
Yeah. Start now.
Oz?
He's still there.
Oz.
Yeah, he's still there.
I'm having bad connection problems, so I might drop out.
Okay. You're probably drunk, too. That's probably what the connection problems are.
No, I'm sober. That's a problem.
What is it, like 10 in the morning?
No, it's 1:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, okay.
What does that mean, Daniela?
2:30.
Yeah.
Not 1:30.
Not 1:30, exactly. It is weird, though. We don't say that in the States. We don't say 1:30. We say 2:30.
But you guys don't have appropriate time anyway. We have military time all over the world, but you guys don't.
Because you guys are
Because we're special.
1400.
Everything does it like kids do that? Like they all say, oh, it's 1400?
Of course.
That's just weird.
I bought an alarm clock last time I was over in Italy, and yeah, it just goes all the way around every year.
Yeah, that's all it does, right?
But this AM PM business really freaks me out.
Do you not have AM PM in Australia, Oz?
Yeah, we do. I spent 10 years in the military, so I sort of it was indoctrinated into me to use a 24-hour clock. It took me years to get out of that habit.
But what about the general public there?
General public is AM, PM.
Yeah, see? They're not so weird.
Also,
over
it's
there.
The United States and Australia.
Just the important places.
You could tell when it's light, right? And tell when it's
we're
dark.
We're upside down, so our clocks go backwards.
Yeah, you're in the southern hemisphere.
When you flush, it goes that way.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Everything's backwards.
I hope Australia becomes the next superpower, you know?
Evil Australia.
I think Australia's going to become the 51st state of America the way we're going.
Yeah, that'd be great.
With all those dingoes, no way.
That's their weapon of mass destruction.
At least the dingoes.
That's why we have to invade Australia to get rid of all the dingoes.
Release the dingoes.
As soon as this show's over, I'm calling George and I'm telling, weapons of mass destruction are in Australia.
It's great that you just said weapons of mass destruction on the air, because now we're going to be screened.
And they're called dingoes.
It's the dingoes.
B-1 bombers full of dingoes. Just they all have little parachutes. Like.
They're DMAs. They're dingoes of mass destruction.
Cluster dingoes.
Bunker little, dingoes.
Little snakes and spiders coming out of the plane.
Precision dingoes.
Heat-seeking dingoes. Long-range dingoes.
Sidewinder dingo.
Yep. Cruise dingoes.
Yeah, you guys are the
what
next.
What are you going to do about the kangaroos?
I think the dingoes can take the kangaroos. Although, the koalas can probably take the dingoes.
No. The koalas, they sleep all the time. They're high all day long.
Don't you remember the news story I read where they ripped off that kid's arm?
Three of them.
Hey, Justin, what do you watch all day?
I know.
How people get mauled.
He watches this show all the time. Yeah. I shouldn't be alive or whatever that thing is called.
Yeah, you guys seen that in the Discovery Channel?
Yeah.
That's exactly what it's called. It's called I Shouldn't Be Alive.
Oh, yeah. I've
watched that.
And it's all these stories of survival where, like, they get eaten by things.
Or they get some impaled on something.
Yeah.
And my kid's like, Daddy, How does he survive with that pipe in him?
You're like, I don't know, son.
Well, let's see. They missed his spleen.
The cool thing about the show is that it's usually a group of people, and a good 4 out of 5 of them, they get eaten.
Oh, yeah.
Or they die or whatever, and only one makes it, and he's the I shouldn't be alive guy.
Yeah.
And they talk
it's
about
crazy.
It.
It's mainly Americans on that show, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, but then that would go for all of us, wouldn't it?
Somehow
Justin is such a freak and all that. Whenever we have a bug or a mouse or a rat or anything in the house, guess who has to take care of it?
Who?
It's not him.
But there's still American bugs and mouse and rat. Because if we were in Australia, they'd all be poisonous.
But Dr. Scott, he still is scared. He freaks out.
It's not that I'm scared.
They could have the chicken disease.
Look, that's right. Look, when you're at war, they don't send the top officer to the front lines, right? They send the lower people. They send the infantry. And that's why I send you, because you never know. That little rat could have rabies or something. You don't want me going down.
Yes, I do. All right, I'll keep saving you from the bugs, no problem.
It could be a dingo. You never know.
You never know. It could turn into a dingo.
Now I'm like, for every dog I see, I'm like, is that a dingo? I'm in Martinez for fuck's
sake. Hide your babies.
Thanks, Oz.
No worries.
We'll see you.
See ya.
Let's get out of here, huh?
Let's go.
Thanks, everybody. Dan Gordon next week. Great show, and we'll see you in exactly 7 days, unless you want to tune into some of our other great programming that happens all throughout the week. Check us out at thebrewingnetwork.com right on the main page. Thanks, everybody.
Jammy show.
Night. Pale ale is a friend of mine, and I sure like good barley wine. Chocolate porter, cherry stout, don't you know what I am talking about? Don't you give me that American crude, for the one of real home. Don't you really love it? Homebrew, can't get enough of it. Homebrew, it blows my mind. I love homebrew all the time. Yeah, I think I have me. Well, I have the one right now. Yeah.
red is round. They should know how to get down. Double and triple on my best friend. I think I'll have them all over again. But don't you give me that American truth. More than what a real homebrew. Homebrew, don't you really love that homebrew? Can't get enough of it. Homebrew, it blows my mind. I love homebrew all of the time. Yeah, I think I'll have it. Well, I'll have it one right now. A vodka zoomy when the skies are gray. I'll take a Belgian brew any time. And the women sing the lambic fine. But don't you give me that American crude. Boys, I want a real homebrew. Homebrew, don't you really love that homebrew? Can't get enough of it.